again, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic here on the MTG Cast Network. This is episode 510, if whoever wrote that in the show notes is to be believed, and I think that was me, so...
Well, I don't know if we believe you, but so we are brought to you today by the number 11,000.
Oh, now I'm sad. We haven't even started the show yet. Thanks.
Sorry, couldn't resist.
I am Chewy, and I am joined this week by everyone's favorite bow-tie-wearing level 2 judge and aggressive enthusiast, let's say. Clues?
I was going to say curmudgeon, but sure. Yeah, hey, how you doing, everybody?
And we are also joined, as always, by everyone's favorite goblin who will not stay in the graveyard, Squee.
Hi, everyone. I'm not a curmudgeon.
That is not an accurate
claim. I tend to think of you as a future curmudgeon.
Getting there.
So, since we have a goblin enthusiast who loves to turn things sideways, and a goblin himself, and because it's extremely relevant to this episode, we are joined by a man who just this weekend surpassed 300 lifetime pro points. He's a weekly writer for TCG Player, and the man for whom Magic is a game of one color with four supporting options. Craig Wesko is with us tonight.
Hey, what's up?
Hi, and welcome.
Thanks.
We are very happy to have you, sir, and congrats again on hitting 300 points. That is, there are only, what, 30-some of you guys? 30?
Sounds about right, yeah.
I looked this up before.
I think me and Brad Nelson both passed it this weekend.
Right.
If you guys all got together and had a tournament, it would be about as long as FNM.
Best FNM ever.
Which some of them might be doing here soon.
Oh, now I'm sad.
That's what you get. So, as we know, Pro Tour Shadows over Innistrad, I don't know what just happened, was there. It happened this week. It was in Spain. Where were you guys? Were you in Barcelona or Madrid? There we go.
Madrid.
Barcelona was last week, wasn't it?
Yep, Grand Prix.
Okay. Just making sure. Where 378 Magic players of no mean skill all showed up to play some new standard, and it was an experience. I would assume. I personally wasn't there because bad at this game. So actually, before the Pro Tour started, there was an announcement, and Craig, I'm glad you're here because we wanted to ask you about this before we forget. What difference did having sleeved cards make in the draft?
Okay, so that was kind of a last-minute change. And the interesting thing about Innistrad block, the way it was originally, and now the return to Innistrad block, was there's double-faced cards. So when drafting the set, there's an interesting dynamic with double-faced cards where you see where a person drafts a double-faced card. So if someone opens up, say, an Arlen Cord, and they take it first pick, you know that they're probably going to be trying to go red-green, right? But if the cards are sleeved with opaque sleeves, like they were on the Pro Tour, which they announced last minute that they would be, somebody can first pick that Arlen Cord, and you would have no idea because the double-faced cards are not shown during the draft. And so this was an announcement that was made right before the Pro Tour, so a lot of the teams had practiced drafting with the double-faced cards revealed as part of their strategy because that's the way they assumed the Pro Tour would be. But then we had to all kind of alter our strategy last minute because now they would not be revealed during the draft. For me in particular, that was not a hindrance, I don't think, because I did 6 drafts in real life where we revealed all the morphs, or I'm sorry, the transform cards. But I did, 16 or something drafts on Magic Online, which you don't have the double face cards revealed. So I did quite a few more drafts where they weren't revealed. So it might have actually helped me a little bit. I don't know. Certainly hurt a lot of players, though, who had prepared the opposite way.
So it the does? Other... Oh, no, go ahead, Squee.
Oh, well, I was saying that from when I was doing it in person and online, the main things that I noticed were in person when you could see what they had, aside from colors, you could know pretty definitively going into the entirety of your draft whether or not someone pulled out an Avacyn. And because Avacyn, by her nature, is a combat trick and a board sweeper in a lot of context, knowing there are none of those in the entire pod actually does let you play differently. And online, you don't have that.
Yeah, and you would also know that the opponent has certain other cards in their deck and know how to play around them. Like, you know, okay, they're probably a Delirium deck, and once they hit Delirium, then they have the Kindly Stranger to, you know, flip over. Maybe you saw that they drafted two Kindly Strangers. And also, you'd have an idea of you passed, you know, this black removal spell to somebody, and they had drafted, you know, two black double face cards already, so it's very likely that they drafted that card for their deck. So you just know that that card's probably in their deck when you face them.
So two things I want to mention about the whole sleeved draft. The first one is, if I'm doing my back of the envelope math here correctly, with 378 players all drafting with three boosters each and about 14 cards in a booster, you're looking at 16,000 cards that had to get sleeved. Which, my understanding is, the poor judges who got saddled with this had about a day and a half or 2 days notice to make that happen. And that was just for one round of drafting. So that a big shout out to them for doing that all at the last minute. That had to suck. We're so sorry. The other one is that if you're drafting these double-faced cards, basically you had to have memorized the backside, or you don't really know what's on the backside. Because, I mean, was anyone actually, like, sliding them out of the sleeve to read them, or was that specifically verboten?
Yeah, there was an announcement made, actually, multiple times, one by Ricky Hayashi, who was calling the draft, who, by the way, did an excellent job, didn't screw up once, and he made the announcement that you cannot remove the card from the double sleeve, the double face card from the sleeve at all throughout the draft, which makes sense because if you're removing it, then everyone else at the table can see you doing that, whether it's during the review period or, you know, during the draft portion. So, like you said, you do have to kind of memorize the cards or at least have some idea of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hope no one got tripped up by not quite remembering what was on the back of this one. I think this is a good uncommon thing.
Yeah. I wasn't. Fortunately, I had done enough preparation where I knew what all the cards did.
Excellent. Well, that was just the first thing that was in the show notes, because this was announced on Tuesday, of course, right after we got done recording Monday night. Tuesday, they come out and say, hey, this is new, so we didn't get a chance to actually think about it out loud on the show, so.
Yeah, my suggestion when they were talking about ideas for how to solve the double face problem was that whenever you pass, you know, they'll make an announcement, all right, pick your card, pass 13 cards, and then they would say, pick up the next booster. Instead of saying, pick up the next booster, say, pause. Now it's nighttime. Look around, see where all the werewolves are. Okay, nighttime's over. Now pick up the next booster. I thought that would add some flavor, you know?
Yeah. And if they got it right, then when Conspiracy comes out, they could actually do it with the Mafia.
And you wake up, and there's like only seven drafters at the table now. What happened? Oh, right, the Mafia.
Your draft pack has been replaced with a horse's head. Hey.
Your horse.
Oh. All right. Well, let's
Oh, well, actually, before we move off from that, Craig, how did you find Shadows Over Innistrad to be as a draft format? Is it fun? Is it enjoyable? Does it hold up after testing? What's your just general feel for it?
Oh, I love it. I think that not only is the flavor kind of right on and just awesome, the cards interact together in a way that so many things are subtle, just little synergies between cards, and kind of unlike the previous time we were on Innistrad, this time you could draft the five tribal themes, the allied tribal colors, which was the same, but then also you could draft the five enemy colors, and they all kind of had a theme. So the allied colors, you could be black-red vampires, green-white humans, blue-white spirits, what's the other, red-green werewolves, and what's the other one?
Blue-black?
Zombies. Yeah, blue-black zombies. But then if you draft the enemy colors, you could be this white-red kind of aggro, indestructible deck. You could draft this black-white kind of sacrifice deck, or this black-green delirium-based deck, or this blue-green sack a bunch of clues deck, or this blue-red play a whole bunch of spells and like five creatures, and the five creatures are this pyre hound that gets bigger every time you cast a spell. And so I thought it was really neat that like all 10 of the two-color pairs all kind of had a theme, but then there's so many unique synergies just between cards that you not only are drafting for power, but you are also drafting a lot of times for synergy, which really kind of made the format a lot of fun for me.
Awesome.
Have you killed anyone with Driskaidekaphobia yet?
I haven't, but I've seen several people do it.
It's actually one of the most doable and limited alternate win conditions I've ever seen.
Aside from just, you know, mill, things yeah. like that. Yeah. It's one of those cards that it looks like one of those, you know, Hedetsugo's second right kind of cards. You're just like, man, that would be awesome if you could actually do that, but it's never going to pan out. But it's just good enough to where you're like, well, you know, I could just have us each gain a life for a couple turns, or, you know, lose a life a couple turns, kind of manipulate it with certain other cards. And, yeah, it's actually a reasonable card.
When I drafted it a week ago, I put it in a deck with a bunch of skull creatures with just one or two power, and then it just became a math game. It was just very directly, I'm going to whittle you down and you're going to die. And it's a very different kind of aggro. It almost felt like I was playing with Infect.
Yeah, it is a little weird when you're going to whittle you down with aggro, but I only need to deal 7 to you.
But exactly 7.
True. So, shall we go to the constructed portion?
Yeah.
All right. Well, this top 8 was it was pretty stacked.
I don't know that I've ever heard of any of these guys. All complete unknowns. It was an amazing Cinderella story for this Pro Tour.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're gonna read some names.
Jonathan Feinkel.
Yeah, I don't know. That guy, he seemed pretty good, I
guess.
Everyone
kept calling him Johnny. Like, they all just knew him. It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. He must know somebody.
He must play combo decks.
Maybe he's someone's, like relative or something. Gee.
Combo decks. Thank you, Squee.
I think they said he had a Pro Tour top 16. Or no, wait, that was 16 Pro Tour top 8. That's what it was.
Oh. Yeah, that order is important.
Yeah, because that's entirely reasonable, yeah. So yeah, John Finkel again, just casually top 8ed another Magic Pro Tour again. Yeah, it seems, I need someone to look this up. Does he just do this like once or twice a year now? Does he just show up out of the blue and top 8 a Pro Tour?
Well, I mean, LSV just kind of came out of the blue and top 8ed 2 Pro Tours back to back too.
Yeah, but LSV is actually more visible in the community. Like John Finkel, it seems like the only time that we ever see him is at Pro Tours. He's like, hey, I'm here, and I'm winning. At least that was, he's always around, you know?
John wasn't winning when we came over to his house and drafted to prepare for the Pro Tour. He barely won any matches in our drafts. But then he, I guess, learned a thing or two and didn't lose any matches at the Pro Tour.
He was sandbagging you. That's what it was.
I was going to say, he's like a pool shark. He just, yeah, come
you
on
see
over.
You him standing there holding his cards upside down, and you're like, this guy's not that good.
I don't know that anyone in the history of Magic is as good as John Finkel. Maybe Kai. That's about it, though.
Yeah, those are the two names you always hear. So, the top 8, Steve Rubin took down the whole thing. With,
Green-white tokens?
I have lost. Where are the deck lists? Oh, they're up. Okay, sorry, I scrolled past them because I'm stupid.
Hey, wait a minute. The deck lists are not in order.
The deck lists aren't in order.
Oh, yeah, man, they're killing
us. They're in, top 8 order, like, going into the top 8 order. They didn't reorder them.
Oh, my God.
Well, could be
this deck looks sweet. It's like Gideon, ally of Zendikar, and Nissa, voice of Zendikar.
And a full set of both? That's what got me. I was like, four Nissa?
I really appreciate all the fours in the list in general. This feels like the kind of deck that I would make, only played by a much better player. It's like, ooh, I have all these mythics. I'm just going to run them. It's going to be awesome. Only here they're actually good.
Just, yeah, I'm really happy to see that Steve caught the, you know, had this really big breakout performance. He hit platinum last year, so that was kind of his breakout year. But he didn't top 8 any of the Pro Tours. He just consistently top 25 to basically all of them. And he's been kind of good enough in waiting for his big break the past couple of years. I remember for Pro Tour in Honolulu that Ari Lax won. Mm-hmm. Steve and Ari were teammates of mine for that Pro Tour, and Steve built Ari's Abzan deck for that tournament. And so Steve is definitely no, like, new unknown person. He's had experience on the Pro Tour, and he's had a big impact on it. And now it's really nice to finally see him have this great big success.
It's true. He's been at the, it's weird to say he's been at the fringe because he's been at the top level. So he's been at the fringe of the top level for a couple years
now. Yeah, but he's never broken through to like a top 8 of a Pro Tour.
Exactly.
He's come close several times, but to see him not only top 8 but win the tournament was, he's a really cool guy too. So, and a really good writer too.
Excellent.
So to me, the real interesting thing about his deck is, excluding basic lands, there are only 5 cards in here that aren't rare or mythic rare. Like 5 total, not 5 different sets of cards, but literally 5 total.
So let's see. It's
Raven Inspector.
The 4 Inspectors.
Yeah, so 4th Raven Inspector and 1 Stasis Snare.
Oh, there it is.
And everything else is at least a rare. But
Raven
swear,
you don't pretty great those. When you're throwing counters around. And it's already pretty good, but then, you know, if your Thraven Inspector becomes like a 2-3 or a 3-4, then life is party time.
So I take it, Craig, that you approve?
Yeah, little white creatures, green cards to support it. Put me on board.
That reminds me, what did you play in the constructed portion?
I played mono-white humans.
Did you play the... Wait, you had a deck tech, didn't you?
I did.
Did you play the, where was the top of your curve?
The top of my curve main deck was Always Watching. I had Gideon, Ally of Zendikar in the sideboard.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you didn't go with the Archangel of Tithes, slow it down a little bit.
Correct. I kind of went super aggro, 22 one drops, just 8 anthem effects. Actually more, I had 11 if you count an Offenza as an anthem effect. So it's basically just all super fast creatures and making them bigger. And then 4 Declaration in Stone. Just because that card's incredible.
Wow.
You're doing absolutely nothing to shatter this stereotype you've built for yourself.
Well,
but on the same note, it works. So, I mean, who are we to complain?
Yeah, I kind of embrace who I am. A lot of players try to act like they're more diverse of a player than they are, but I just kind of, I know who I am, and when there's a tier 1 mono-white deck, like, I think every single person in that tournament knew what I was going to play coming into the tournament.
Are you ever tempted to just show up with, like, Eldrazi Ramp, just to get those looks the first game all day?
I have done that before. I played Esper Control at Grand Prix Cincinnati a couple years ago, because I knew that for that particular weekend, it was by far the best deck. And I was right. The finals was a pair of Esper Control decks facing off in the mirror match, and Kyle Bogomus won. And I played Esper in that tournament. I did very poorly. And I was like, yes, I think I know why I did poorly. I played a deck that was outside my range. I kept hands I probably shouldn't have kept, and just, I think it's better. Like, I feel like if I play the white deck and the white deck is good, then I can compete with anyone in the world. Whereas if I'm trying to play a deck that, you know, I'm not going to beat Owen Turtenwald in the Jund mirror, you know, or I'm not going to beat Seth Manfield in the Esper Dragons mirror. But if I have the white deck in my hands, then I feel like I could compete with anyone in the world.
So you, what you're saying is you've got a plus nine with a white weenie deck.
Yeah, something like that.
He gets a set bonus, you see.
Synergy's important.
So, so that's, Steve, to go back to the top eight, that's Steve Rubin's, tokens deck. It's an evolution of a deck we saw, I think, last week at the, either the Invitational or the Open, whichever. This one looks a little more.
Yeah, I think, Chris Anderson has been, he wrote an article about green white tokens, and then he made top 16 at an SCG tournament with it. I know he's been real big on green white tokens, and a few other players have also.
So let's see, what is next? Second place looks like Andrea Mengucci with Bant Company.
This a popular one.
Yeah. How much Bant Company was there all over the meta?
I don't know what the final numbers ended up being, but I know going in, a lot of people were predicting like 18 to 20%. Like, that was kind of the deck that you knew a lot of people are going to show up with. So you knew you had to have a game plan against that deck.
Yeah, I want to say that I'm pulling up the numbers now, but I want to say that when I was tuning in over the weekend, it was the biggest deck on day one, and it got a lot of attrition going into day two, partly because everyone knew it was going to be a big deck. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking for the numbers to back that up.
That makes sense.
It's a powerful deck. Like, one of the new additions is the Recruiter, Duskwatch Recruiter. And the thing that card does is the draws where you don't have Collected Company, or maybe you draw one Collected Company and then the game kind of stalls out, and the Duskwatch Recruiter will just find you more creatures because your deck is primarily creatures anyway. It has to be for Collected Company. And so then you just dig for creatures, and then when you're digging for creatures, you're not casting a spell, so then it flips. And then your creatures that you dug for costs one less, so then you could just cast multiples of them in the same turn. And then since you cast multiple spells, he flips back over, which allows you to dig for more creatures. So it's just kind of this really powerful two-drop that acts as an engine to replace your hand with more creatures, or refill your hand with more creatures.
It's one of the interesting werewolves where you kind of want the day side of it more than you normally would in a werewolf.
Well, you want both sides. So, you do the one side to find more creatures, and mm-hmm. he flips over while you're finding them, and then since he's flipped over, he makes all his creatures cost less, which allows you to play multiple spells, which flips it back over. So it's like this really sick cycle that is hard to break if you don't have
it. It's like a one-card engine?
Yeah,
basically, yeah.
Okay, so I found the numbers. So on day one, like going into the first day, there were 87 Bant Company decks, so they made up 23% of the field. And then coming back on day two, there were 49 Bant Company decks, which at that point had gone down to only 20.8% of the field. So it wasn't as extreme as what I'd said before, but that's still incredible given the scale of, like, literally every fifth deck. So
that is pretty good. Plus, it runs Reflector Mage, which is already borderline unfair. So let's see. Who's next? The deck lists aren't in order. I don't know what to do. Seth Manfield was playing Esper Control. And I think this one surprised a lot of people. Because who actually plays Sphinx of the Final Word? Well, looks like Seth Manfield does.
That would seem to be true.
Seth played Mono White Humans the week before at the SCG Invitational.
Mm-hmm.
But I know from experience with Seth, because he used to be a teammate of mine, the week before the Pro Tour, whether it's a WMCQ or Star City Invitational, something like that, he'll usually play kind of an obvious strategy, and then he'll play a more controlling deck at the Pro Tour. And so I did not expect him to play Mono White, and I ended up facing him the last round of day one. We were both 6-1, and he beat me in game three. He cast Anticipate, and he needed to find an untapped land to cast his Languish, and he did, and he cast Languish. And then his tournament kind of kept going well after that, and mine kind of nosedived. So it's kind of the turning point of the tournament for me, just losing to Seth.
Well, at least the guy who turned it around, or turned it down for you, actually did really well, right?
Yeah, and he represented TCG player quite well, as he usually does. So I'm happy about that, too.
But these Planeswalkers, man, good lord. Two of New Jace, three Narset, one Kool-Aid Man, and two of New Sorin. Phew.
Now that's
Kool-Aid Man
Jace.
Being Obnixless.
I'm sorry, is that new Jace? My bad, yeah.
Yeah, I'd still just call him Jerkface, but sure.
What's up with the Narset? Where did she come from? That's crazy. I mean, it makes a lot of sense in this deck. It just, she had been relegated to the, like, the Commander Mythics, and that was it.
Well, if you notice, he doesn't have any raw card draw spells. Like, he doesn't, does he have Painful Truths? Does he have anything like that? Most, like, all this card draw is Planeswalkers, if I remember correctly, right? And all those Planeswalkers draw him cards.
That is a good point. Let's see, Jace, draw a card. Narset, put it in your hand. Obnixilus, draw a card. Sorin. Okay, Sorin's just good.
Well, Sorin, draw a card, opponent takes damage equal to its mana cost.
Oh, it does put it into your hand. Excuse me, I missed that.
Yeah, it's reverse Bob.
Oh, right, it's reverse Bob, okay.
Yeah, in this deck, it's running 4 Anticipate, which is, I mean, it's kind of card draw. It's also kind of like glorified supercycling.
So
a little bit.
Yeah, the important thing about Anticipate is it makes the deck feel like it has more than 4 languishes, which is really important in a lot of the matchups. So, for instance, against the white deck, Languish, like if you don't have a turn 4 Languish, you lose the next turn. And he doesn't have enough removal spells to try to play the game without drawing a Languish. So by playing, and he doesn't have enough time to resolve a Planeswalker to find the Languish. So Anticipate is kind of the only way he can find the Languish outside of if he had played, say, Painful Truths. But again, Painful Truths, if you have to have an untapped land on turn 3 to cast Painful Truths, you need another untapped land on turn 4 to cast the Languish. But instead, you just can keep playing tapped lands and play a tapped land on turn 3 and Anticipate and then play his untapped land on turn 4 for Languish.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense because it's not like he can just wait to Dark Petition that he's dead. So.
Let's see. Swing for game. All right, well, in response, it doesn't work.
Is me being dead on the stack? No.
Okay, what is next? Next is Shota Yasuoka playing, of course, Esper Dragons, duh. A deck that didn't really change, other than some mana base, of course, obviously.
Yeah, Shota's just a master. He can win with anything.
Good.
It's a good skill.
Yeah.
I mean, I did... when I was watching the top 8, I saw Ojutai just showing up and being like, well, did you pack the sideboard hate? Because we're not going to get to that till, you know, game 3. And Ojutai just smashed his face.
But we have been talking about this deck for quite a long time now, so let's move on. John Finkel. Yeah, that guy. Is playing, okay, this was another breakout thing that people were all in a tizzy about. Seasons Past Control. So Seasons Past, for those of you that missed it, is a sorcery that costs 6 that says return any number of cards with different converted mana costs from your graveyard to your hand and put Seasons Past on the bottom of its owner's library. And,
So, yeah. I didn't miss it. This deck wasn't really a thing before now.
Right? Well, no, I meant if you missed what the card did, because...
Yeah, I'm just making sure that I just hadn't not noticed this one.
No. Pantheon creation for the Pro Tour.
Yeah. And how many guys were playing this deck? I forgot.
There were several members of Pantheon playing it, if I remember correctly.
I forgot the count, but yeah. And, I mean, Seasons Past essentially says draw just 4 or 5 cards from your graveyard.
Yeah, you Seasons Past says draw 4 removal cards from your graveyard.
It basically says if the game's still going, you win.
Yeah, pretty much. Because, like, the first thing I did when I heard about it was look at the mana cost. Wait, you can actually sort by cost. So he's got, let's see, removal and disruption on 1. Removal, disruption, removal, removal, removal on 2. Nissa, I guess infinite obliteration is removal and disruption and sort of all of them mixed into 1. And then more removal, and then more removal. Then he's got removal on 4.
Languish.
And then he's got tutoring, and some, I don't know how important Orbs of Warding was.
The important thing is that you Dark Petition to get Seasons Past, which puts Dark Petition in the graveyard, and then when needed, you can Seasons Past Dark Petition back and do it again, because Seasons Past goes on the bottom of your library.
See, that's just stupid. Good lord. So, but it's not just Seasons Past to get Dark Petition back, it's Seasons Past to get Dark Petition back, plus these other 3 or 4 removal spells.
Right.
It's
and on top
just
of it,
stupid.
You also have the luxury of digging out that Evolving Wild you used a long time ago if you just want another one. Because it costs 0.
Let's not forget the lands, yeah.
Having watched a few games of it on the feed, I found that it's obviously really great when you can just, you know, kill everything that they play as they play it, and then get all your kill spells back while they're doing whatever they need to do, and then, you know, you just kill them at your leisure. I've also seen instances where the deck runs into a bit of trouble because it might take it a while to actually start doing something to the opponent if they can somehow deal with its, you know, Kalatos. And it looks really, really grindy, but in practice, the way that I heard it described on the coverage was, do you like Sphinx's Revelation? Do you want to build a Sphinx's Revelation? Because ultimately you're playing it the same way. You're grinding out for a while, and then you're reloading while your opponent isn't. And then you're just going to win by having more cards than they do.
Yeah, you can afford to play removal spells a little more, I don't want to say haphazardly, but a little more liberally when you know you can just reload in a couple turns. Buh. So, of course, watch the master at work, and look, casually top 8 another Pro Tour. You know, just add another one to the checklist. Next up, we have Brad Nelson, who was playing the Goggles Ramp deck, and I was so happy to see that this was not just a 1 week, the Goggles themselves are not just a, you know, first week of new standard flash in the pan. These things are actually sticking around and putting in work.
Yeah, Todd Anderson kind of popularized the Goggles, or reminded people that it's a Magic card still, with his blue-red thing in the ice deck. And I believe Brad also played Fall of the Titan, just like Todd did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a crazy combo, just being able to chain those two together.
That, I mean, crazy combo is one way to put it. I would think borderline unfair, but yeah, okay, that works too.
Well, yeah,
there
was a great moment when the commentators were watching one of the games. They're like, okay, so his opponent has 19 life. He might be dead. Because the Goggles were in play, and the Fall of the Titans was available. And so the math got really interesting to watch that.
Yeah, it gets pretty unfair pretty quickly if you get to start casting cards with Goggles.
Yeah, I mean, Magmatic Insight costs a mana. It says discard a land, draw 4 cards. Yeah, that's fair. That's fine. Just do that.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, that land I discarded, let me pay 3 mana and put it onto the battlefield.
Perfectly fair. Wait.
Also, you get a Tarka, which is just fun.
All right. What else do we have? Who's next? Next is LSV, right? LSV is in 7th.
Yay! And, I mean, sorry. Yeah, I just really like LSV.
And he's playing Clues is going to twitch slightly.
I'm just going to go all fanboy.
You're going to twitch slightly because of the name of the deck. He's playing the Black-Green Aristocrats deck, which has nothing to do with any Aristocrats anymore.
No, it doesn't. It's the cutthroat deck, LSV. Come on. Actually, I'm going to blame coverage. I'm going to pretend that LSV didn't name it.
Okay, so LSV is part of my pro team, Team Ultra Pro. And we came up with this deck early in testing, and it was doing really well. But then we came up with some other decks that were kind of outperforming it. But then after the two Star City weekends and the metagame was much more defined, we kind of picked that deck back up, and we're like, hey, this has a lot of good matchups against a lot of these decks that are doing well. So we start testing it again, and we made a few changes to the deck that made it a lot more powerful. And the majority of the team ended up playing that deck in the Pro Tour. And in our defense, in testing, we were calling it Black Green Company, not Aristocrats. So I think that might have been a coverage thing.
Yes, blame coverage.
I mean, it does have the company right there.
Well, also, to be fair, Sam Black was on our team, so that might have been... He might have had some input there.
Oh, that's true. But
he was the designer of the Aristocrats deck that another one of our teammates, Tom Martel, used to win the Pro Tour in Montreal. Gatecrash.
So how long did it take for Cryptolith Wright to drop into the deck? I have to know.
That, I think, was a card that we tested early on, before we had Duskwatch Recruiter in the deck, and it underperformed. But then, once we realized Duskwatch Recruiter was supposed to be in the deck, we revisited Cryptolith Wright, and the two of them together was just very good. Because, again, Recruiter is that engine that I talked about from the Bank Company deck, and now in this Black-Green Company deck, you can kind of do the same thing, where you just recruit a bunch. But then with the Cryptolith Wright, it allows you to tap all your creatures to continue recruiting for more creatures. So you can end up recruiting like three times in a turn and then cast all those creatures. And then the next turn you can recruit like five times. And, you know, it's just like it kind of grows exponentially. And then you just kill the opponent by sacking all your creatures to a husk with the Zulaport Cutthroats.
How often would you say the Westvale Abbey actually transforms?
Not that often. A lot of times it's just a way, like if you don't have Husk, just to sacrifice five of your guys to kill them with the Zulaport Cutthroats. Like if you have two Cutthroats in play or something, and you have five creatures, and you're just like, what are you at? They're like, 10. We're like, alright, sack all my creatures, kill you. Or if they don't have a way to block your 9 power flyer, it's like, what are you at? 19. Okay, sack all my creatures, 10 you, attack you for 9, kill you.
Yeah.
So the deck was really sweet, and in fact I was working on a white-black version of the deck that ran Secure the Waste and Aili Eternal Pilgrim, and that was one of our front-runner decks for a while in testing, but Matt Nass and some of the Denver guys were putting a lot of work into the green-black version, and that one ended up being the better choice based on how the metagame shaped up.
Nice. It's just, it's so weird that they printed, as Bill said before, they printed an uncommon werewolf where the front isn't just a thing that you're hurrying up to get away from. It's so nice.
Yeah, it's a really awesome Magic card.
It kind of reminds me a bit of, for very different reasons, but Huntmaster of the Fells, which is something you actively wanted to trigger flipping frequently. And in the case of this one, it does it on its own, and if it's flipping, it means you just did something great. So it just worked out.
Yeah, we were calling it the mythic uncommon of the set in our testing.
Oh, nice. Yeah, without a doubt.
I mean, it does feel like a mythic, even though it's an uncommon.
Mm. And then, rounding out the top eight, we have Luis Salvato playing a deck that I'm pretty sure Clues is happy with. The red-white Eldrazi goggles.
Yes.
As soon as I saw this, I was like, Clues is going to love this! Because it's running Nunu Chandra.
Yes.
Nahiri, who we all thought was well-designed at the very least, and then just good stuff to do with Eldrazi Displacer, and lots of fire. Oh, and goggles. Don't forget the goggles. They do something.
They're right there in the name.
Yeah, yeah.
An interesting thing about Luis Salvato, he's probably the least known player in this top eight. He's from Argentina. He won the Sunday Super Series a couple years ago, the thing that Sam Black just won this past year. And I played against Luis in round 9 of the Pro Tour when we were 6-2. And this is in the limited portion, and he set up this play where he innocuously attacked with two of his creatures, and my obvious block was to block his Thraben Inspector so I could kill it and just take damage from his other creature. And it looked like he was just going to use some sort of pump spell to kill my guy in combat. And I was like, okay, if he uses his pump spell here, then he doesn't cast a creature, and so then I can untap and I can cast a creature, and like the exchange is good for me. Otherwise, you know, he's just going to continue to have a better opportunity to use that pump spell. And instead, he just lets his Thraben Inspector die, and I was like, okay. And then two turns later, it became apparent that when he played his Toppelgeist to tap my guy, and now he has Delirium because he has a creature in the graveyard. And then he was able to tap my guy on my turn so that I would fall behind in the race. And then he played a flyer, the 3-3 flash flyer on my end step. Then he untapped and played the 2-3 flyer that gains 3 life because you have a spirit. And then he was 1 point ahead in this race that I thought I was way ahead in. And so he ended up beating me by 1 life. And at the end of the game, I was just like, you play a lot of limited, don't you? He's like, yeah. I was like, yeah, I can tell. So he's a very strong player, the strongest player I've ever seen from Argentina. And they've had, I think, Diego Ostrovich was the last really strong Argentina Magic Pro, and I believe that Luis Salvato, this is definitely not the last time we've seen him do well in a Magic tournament. He's very good.
Sweet. Well, I mean, top 8ing a Pro Tour is a good way to make a name for yourself and start showing up on people's radar.
Yeah. So definitely showed up on my radar round 1 of day 2.
So when it all turned around and was going downhill, he just kicked you down the hole.
Yeah. Kind of accelerated that process down the hill.
So we'll that's...
I'll get him back later.
Well, of course, yeah. Rivalries. Ha! Ah, we... Yeah. So that's the top 8. How was the rest of the meta outside of the top 8?
Well, the Humans deck was very popular, the deck that I played. And I believe Luis beat a Humans deck. Luis, Scott Vargas, defeated a Humans deck playing for top 8, if I remember correctly. There were a few that kind of came close to making the top 8, and there were several on day 2 and quite a few on day 1. So it was definitely a popular archetype that was not represented in the top 8. Of course, if I had a better day 2, I could have represented it.
Yeah, well, you know. They can't all be winners, right?
This is true.
I mean, you did get, what, a top 100 finish, 4 points to hit 300. Seems like a pretty good weekend. Maybe not the best.
I was hoping for a little better, but, you know, there's always Sydney. I can get it back there.
Just don't die.
Yeah, that's true. Sydney's in Australia. That place is dangerous. That's a running joke on the show, sorry.
Yeah, watch out for drop bears.
Drop bears are not cool.
What's a drop bear?
Oh, look up.
Oh, I'm gonna put a link in the chat, don't worry about it.
Oh Lord. Okay. So since we only have Craig for a limited time, we should probably turn our attention to the darker side of the Pro Tour weekend, and that is the organized play announcements that were made right before the top 8 started, which have a lot of people up in arms. So, real quick, let's run through what we actually learned from this. We get the locations and schedules of the Pro Tours and the World Magic Cup for next year. So we've got, Dublin, Ireland, Nashville, Tennessee, God help us all, Kyoto, Japan, Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Nice, France for the World Magic Cup. So that's cool.
Yeah, I think this is the first time we've had a Pro Tour in Albuquerque.
I know it's the first time that they've had a pro tour in Nashville. It's the first time they've had anything in Nashville, I think, isn't it? Have there been GP Nashvilles?
Nashville's yeah, there's been Grand Prix in Nashville.
Okay, just the first pro tour in Nashville.
Yeah, there's been a Worlds in Memphis, but never a pro tour in Nashville.
Right.
And I know this because that's my home turf. I grew up in Nashville. That's where I learned how to play Magic. That's where my parents live.
Nice.
It's going to be my homecoming pro tour next year. I'm excited about that.
That is awesome. It is close enough to where I really hope that I can actually go and do some work there. But before people start bothering me, no promises. Being broke is still, you know, a problem. So that's the first thing. We got those. So next up, we have the announcement there will be no more modern pro tours. They did this a year or so ago, and the internet exploded. And so they recanted. They were like, okay, fine, we'll give you one modern one. And hey, look, it sucked. Not only did it suck, it broke an entire format for the next 3 months. Although I don't think those two things are necessarily related.
The Eldrazi plot was to end modern pro tours forever. that is the mystery that Jace will find in Tomio's journal.
They have no interest in Zendikar itself. They were looking to end modern
just pro totally tours. Breaking the Magic or modern pro tours. That's it.
Yeah, so it was interesting. The first time they made the announcement that they would make all pro tours standard, and everyone was up in arms about not having a modern pro tour, they had not yet said that they were changing the way standard rotates, and so everyone just thought it was going to be like two stale pro tours and then an exciting rotation pro tour, and then like a whole another year of like stale pro tours of like old formats. But then it makes a lot more sense with the new set rotation, where every single pro tour, there's going to be like a new big change because there's rotations happening so fast. So every other pro tour, there's going to be a rotation. And then even when there's not a rotation, introducing one extra set into such a small card pool is going to act like a big influence. So I think having a standard pro tour now every 3 months as representing all the pro tours, I think that makes a lot of sense because it does showcase the new cards in a big mm-hmm. way. And if they don't have a pro tour that's standard like they did with the modern one, now with this modern one, it happened to showcase the Eldrazi in a way that maybe they didn't want, but it did end up getting showcased. Whereas most modern pro tours, I think, would not showcase the new cards. It would just be a lot of decks that were already established and don't really showcase the new set the way they want it to. So I think from a business marketing standpoint, I think it's the correct decision to have all standard pro tours.
Oh, yeah. And from an enjoyability to watch standpoint, I think it does, too. Because when you get that many minds of that level pointed at a format that is non-rotating and is basically, I don't want to say solved because that has connotations I don't mean, but it's basically figured out with just room for tweaks. It's not as interesting as a whole brand new format never before seen except for a couple of Star City events and those sort of don't count. So
I think the nuances of the Eternal and or the non-rotating formats are that it becomes more about observing the metagame and planning accordingly. And that's not something that's nearly as engaging for people who don't want to do that. They just want to see which of the Planeswalkers is going to be awesome and which cards they can't afford anymore.
Really?
And Standard is much better for that.
I always thought Modern was just about playing Green-White Hate Bears every time. Is it something else?
I think sometimes you can mono-white, but I don't know. Somebody else might know more about that.
Okay. See, I thought it was about playing a red burn deck and having to splash white.
You mean getting to splash white?
Okay, I walked into that.
That was good.
Opportunity is everything, though. But not the spell.
All right, moving on.
So yeah, take that, Modern.
The next chain. Now, everybody freaked out. Does that mean we don't have Modern PPTQ? No, we still have Modern all the other stuff. Everybody calm down. We're still going to have Modern GPs, just not Pro Tours. It's fine. It's cool.
Which is actually, I think that's better for Modern players because now there's fewer times for the format to like undergo a drastic change. So it seems like every Pro Tour, it's like, oh, you know, Birthing Pod's too good, Twin's too good, Eldrazi's too good, because, like, all the pros just, like, figured out which deck is the best deck, and they just dominate the Pro Tour with it, and then something has to get banned. And so everyone's like, God, my deck keeps getting banned, you know? And now, if it's only Grand Prix that we're worried about, then I think there's going to be less drastic changes with the metagame. I think there's going to see a lot more stability. I think it's overall going to be better for the modern format. I think it's just not a fit for the Pro Tour. But I think it's a great format for Grand Prix and all the other levels.
Yeah, with a Grand Prix, the only pros that you get going are the ones that either want to go or need to go because, you know, points. But when you make it a Pro Tour, you're basically forcing all the pros to pay attention to Modern. It's similar to why they killed Extended a long time ago. Well, one of the reasons they killed Extended a long time ago, because nobody cared about Extended until it was the format you had to play. And then once it was no longer the format you had to play, no one cared about Extended anymore.
Yeah, and Block ran into that too.
Yeah. So,
I missed Block.
Was it because it was a more aggressive format?
It's just, I don't know. I liked playing with the weaker cards. Patrick Chapin and I won the last two Block Pro Tours.
I guess that helps.
So, yeah, at least we went out on top, you know?
So what you want is for a Pro Tour format that's, like, box limited. So that you get all the fun of limited with all the fun of Block. And still get to play with all the cards you want.
Full box sealed.
I'm pretty much game for anything. Interesting that you said that. I meant to bring up this point when we were talking about the sleeved draft at the Pro Tour. It kind of felt like I was cube drafting, you know? Because I'm like, wow, these cards, like, I open this pack and it's all sleeved cards, you know? Just like you would in a cube draft.
Nice.
That kind of had a different feel and it was kind of fun.
Nice. Did they give you nothing but really classy beta lands to play with, too?
Yeah, I was hoping that they would, like, give us sleeved lands, but I guess that's asking too much from the judges.
Oh, the poor judges.
Yeah. Well, so you're drafting the cards sleeved. Do you then transfer them to your own sleeves?
You could, but since you're drafting a 42 cards, you could just unsleeve the cards you're not playing with and sleeve those with
lands.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
That's what a lot of people did. But then you play against the guy playing with that Memories card or whatever, and he's trying to mill you out, and you want to board into, like, a 54-card deck, and then it's just a nightmare. You're like, God, why did I use these sleeves?
Huh, that's an actual draft sideboard strategy.
I have to say what would have been great is if the sleeves that they had tried to use at first were not quite opaque. And they got through the first, like, 8,000 that they were sleeving, and they're like, wait a minute. Ah, crap. Gotta start over.
Clues, you're a horrible, horrible person, and you're filling
his judge nightmares.
I just like to think of worst-case scenarios and then share them with everyone else so they can have nightmares, too.
You think that's bad? I tweeted that I hope this is all some sick troll, and that all the double-faced cards that are sleeved, the back of them is just the back of a Magic card, and so they can't actually transform. Just like that would troll the entire
like clone Magic. What I would have really liked to see is you get to them, and then you look in there, and they're all just the checklist cards. Like, their solution was just to replace all of the double-faced cards with checklist cards that they've pre-bubbled in for you, so that you can draft them the normal way.
Oh, my God. Okay, we're dancing around the bad.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Let's get to it. The next bit in the Premier Play updates, the Hall of Fame. Yeah. The Hall of Fame members, were getting an appearance fee for each Pro Tour. I think it was a $1,500 appearance fee. Now they are only going to get that at the Pro Tour each year that has the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Which, I'm like, I hate to take away from the Hall of Famers, but this one I can sort of understand. Because each year the Hall of Fame gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and each year your appearance fees just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and lots of pros, well, lots of the Hall of Famers, maybe not lots, but some of the Hall of Famers just sort of show up and go through the motions, You know, it's not that they don't prepare, it's that they don't prepare super hard for a pro tour. Obviously, John Finkel is not one of them.
Now, my understanding... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so basically there's 4 pro tours a year, and they would get $1,500 appearance fee for each pro tour. So if you go to every pro tour, you'd get $6,000 appearance bonus. Now, you only get $1,500. So for the 20 or so Hall of Fame players that go to all 4 Pro Tours each year, they're basically taking a $4,500 cut.
Sure.
But like you said, in terms of sustainability, you know, as the Hall of Fame gets bigger and bigger each year, at some point we're over budget and we have to do something, right?
Right.
And so that, like you said, it's kind of a tough pill to swallow, but getting into the Hall of Fame, the main benefit was that you're invited to Pro Tours for life. So you never have to grind through the PTQ circuit or whatever again in order to get back onto the Pro Tour. You're just automatically invited. Now, the appearance bonuses were kind of an added incentive to try to get the pro players in the Hall of Fame to attend the Pro Tours. But they decided that they weren't getting what they wanted out of that. Like, a lot of the players still weren't coming. And the ones that were, a lot of times, like you said, are just kind of phoning it in, collecting their appearance bonus, and then the 20 or so that are not phoning it in, they are coming to the Pro Tour anyway, because they're like Paul Rietzel, Ben Stark, Luis Scott Vargas, John Finkel, who just want to do well at the Pro Tour, and like maybe they're platinum pros already, so they're getting other bonuses on top of that. Mm-hmm. And so just paying everyone this $6,000 a year just like wasn't basically worth it to them. And that wasn't really a thing that was promised. It was just kind of like a gift. And now they're saying, okay, from now on, that gift is getting taken away. And that's like, okay, that's perfectly reasonable. We understand. We still get the invites, and you're still honoring it for one pro tour, and you're telling us up front. So now we can make our decisions based on this new information. And it's like, okay, it's kind of sad, but it is what it is. And, you know, it's reasonable.
Yeah, and I mean, they still have the lifelong invites, and does that come with the travel voucher?
No, the $1,500 is intended to pay for your flight and hotel expenses and things like that, and so now you're only getting that for one pro tour, but you're still getting invited to all 4.
Okay, gotcha. I see. And
From the feedback that I've heard so far from Hall of Famers who have commented on this have essentially been just that. Oh, yeah, sure, we get it. This is fine.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've read a response on this whole thing from John Finkel and Brian Kibler, and they both went, makes sense. So that's cool. It's not cool, but we understand. We got it.
It's a little easier to swallow when you're working a six-figure job outside of Magic. For some of the pros that are, you know, in the Hall of Fame and trying to make a living off of Magic, it's a little tougher pill to swallow. But like I said, it's still a thing that, you know, that's their decision and it's reasonable we accept it.
Yeah. Now let's skip over the next bit, just because that's where we're going to spend most of our time. The world's payout. Wait a minute. Let me make sure I don't screw this up.
The world championship payout
has been increased this year to $250,000.
That's the total prize pool.
Right. What was it last year? Was it 100,000? 150? It was something like that. And, by the same note, next year's 2017's World Championship prize pool is up to $500,000, with the first place, the winner, the world champion, taking home $100,000. Now, those are big numbers. That is not a small number.
Yeah, that's the best news from this announcement, is that now there's a $500,000 world championship where first place wins six figures, which has never happened in a Magic tournament ever, where first place was $100,000. So now anyone trying to live out the dream of becoming world champion now gets $100,000. I've been playing Pro Magic for 6 years, and I'm one of the, I'd say maybe, I don't know, there's 20 or so players that have made more money than me in this span. And I have, my lifetime winnings is about 150,000. So now the world champion each year is going to make almost what I made my entire career off of one tournament. And I'm like one of the more successful pros at that. So this is quite a thing. This is, that's, you know, going from 50,000 to 100,000 is a big deal. That's like, you're able to chain maybe 3 to 4 years of Magic together, pro level Magic, just off those one set of tournament winnings. So now, yeah, if you win the world championship, like, you're set for years.
And so my question is, if first place is getting $100,000 and second place is getting $50,000, then when you go into that final definitive game and you draw straight land for 4 turns, can we actually call that a $50,000 tilt?
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, it happens. Like, you look at the finals of a Pro Tour where, you know, the difference is 40,000 and 20,000, but then you're also looking at platinum benefits for the next year, which is another 20,000, or was. And so that's like a $40,000 swing with a single match. And this is a $50,000 swing in one match, plus, I guess, an auto invite to next year's Worlds, which is a minimum 12,000 if we're talking 2017. So, I mean, yeah, the swing gets slightly bigger, but pro Magic players are, you know, these huge swings like that in the final rounds of tournaments. That's not something new to pro level Magic.
That's totally fair.
Now, at the same time, while this is, you know, I guess, like you said, probably the only good news in this announcement is this increase in prize.
And Pro Tour Nashville, that's good news to me.
the World Championships, while it is an amazing dream, it's not like any rando is going to be able to make it to the World Championships. You actually have to be invited to this. The World Championships is, what, only 24 players?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. They get the invite each year. And so you had to do something pretty amazing along the way to even make it to that table where you're playing for the 100,000.
And I'm guessing that they're going to change that for 2017 because the line after the chart with the big impressive numbers to make us go, ooh, is we will announce the methods for how you can qualify for this at Pro Tour Eldritch Moon. So it looks like they're going to alter that, how much it's impossible to say until they actually, you know, tell us.
Right.
But so you might be wondering, wow, that's a big increase in prize payout over the next 2 years. Where's all this money coming from? Well,
yeah.
Damn. So this is hard to read because this does not affect me at all. And it doesn't affect anyone that I have any sort of contact with on a regular basis. Hey, look, Craig Wesco's here. But it's a fundamental shift in the way Wizards handles themselves.
Yeah, well, so, okay, here's how I want to lead into this, okay, because some people may not be aware of how Platinum benefits work. So, dear listener, let's say that I told you that we made an announcement today that Platinum Pros are going to get $250 just for competing at every Pro Tour, and they'll get $250 just for competing at the World Cup, and they'll get $250 just for competing at a World Magic Cup qualifier. Sounds great, right? Except that all of that is a horrible slash to what they were previously getting as Platinum Pros. So previously, a Platinum Pro would get $3,000 for competing at a Pro Tour, and $1,000 for competing at the World Magic Cup, and $500 for competing at a World Magic Cup qualifier. So all these pros who ground for their platinum points, who used to, now I don't know that it's necessarily fair to say that they made their living at playing Magic, but this is how they were able to justify spending all of that extra time playing Magic and innovating with decks and play testing and traveling to all of these tournaments, that all of that has just suddenly changed overnight and been slashed to a fraction of what it was.
Yeah, don't spare anyone's feelings there, Cliff.
Well, I mean, it's an abrupt change. So if people are wondering what the hell is going on social media these past couple of days, you know, you've got to put it into perspective. So, Craig, what was your first? Well, okay, maybe not your first. There's no swearing on Monday Night Magic. What was your initial response to this? I mean, did it seem like they've made a horrible mistake that can't be right, or what? What was going through your mind?
Okay, so I would consider myself probably one of the more level-headed pro players, or just kind of a more level-headed person in general, especially when dealing with an adverse circumstance like this. So when I first looked at it, it was like, okay, they're increasing the prize structure for the marquee tournament of the year. And I think that's great. I think that's something that most people have been lobbying to try to achieve for several years now, given the growth of Magic. And now the fact that it's happening is great news. Unfortunately, instead of just adding money to the budget, they took it away from the Pro Players Club benefits. So basically now, instead of having a more stable sort of threshold to achieve a certain level of bonuses, you now, everything's kind of graded on the curve. It's all or nothing whether you qualify for Worlds or not. So, for instance, I traveled earlier this year 7 weeks in a row, including a trip to Beijing, China, to play in a team Grand Prix, which I ended up winning. That was my first Grand Prix win. And so 7 weeks in a row, including international travel, is pretty taxing. It's a lot of work. Now, the reason I did that is because I want to accumulate pro points so that I could hit the platinum level, which would essentially give me this $20,000 bonus and appearance fees. Now, by taking away platinum, what they've done is they've said there's no longer this threshold that once you achieve 50 points, that's what you need for platinum this year, once you achieve those 50 points, you're basically guaranteed enough money to sustainably support yourself for the next year of Magic. So a lot of people kind of took this risk and said, okay, I'm going to dedicate this year to Magic to hit platinum. And then once they hit platinum, it's like, okay, now I'm going to get paid for my efforts next year so that I can continue to play Magic professionally the next year. Now what they've done, instead of having these thresholds where you get a certain level of points to achieve these appearance bonuses, now everything's just kind of graded on the curve, where it's just whoever the top 24 players are who qualify for the World Championship, they all get these big bonuses by playing in this end-of-the-year bonus World Championship tournament, and no one else gets any bonuses, just the World Championship competitors. So I understand where they're coming from a business standpoint. They want to support only the best of the best. They don't want to support these like multiple tiers of pros. They want to say, if you're gold, you've earned an invite to the Pro Tour, and we're honoring that. But now, if you're a platinum level pro, but you're not qualified for the World Championship, you're kind of this middle type of pro, where like you're a pro, but you're not like the top of the top pros. And so they're kind of taking that money away from platinum and moving it ahead into the World Championship competitors. So now if you're the absolute best of the best, like the top 10 or 15 players in the world, then you're going to be making even more money than you're making as a platinum pro. But now if you're not, if let's say you're the 30th best player in the world or the 25th best player in the world, instead of making that $20,000 bonus so you can continue playing for the next year, now you make zero. Or not zero, but or whatever it would be, like maybe $5,000 or something.
Comparatively zero.
Right. Not enough to do it.
Right.
As opposed to previously the $20,000 allowed you to do it. So that's the thing that kind of a lot of people are upset about. I've been in the position where I was platinum for 3 out of the last 4 years, and I've been able to play Magic and produce content for TCG Player as basically my sole source of income. And players in similar positions to mine who have not reliably been able to qualify for the World Championship each year, we basically are now in a position where we have to find some alternate source of funding to continue playing Magic professionally. And that's the one thing that people are kind of upset about. But it's understandable. Like, Wizards is under no obligation to pay for platinum-level pros. If they only want to support the best of the best, the World Championship competitors, that's their prerogative. But the thing that most players are upset about is the fact that they're cutting it for the 2016 year as opposed to starting it with 2017. Because all the players who have played in Grand Prix, including, say, you know, doing some of the things like I've done, traveling across the world to pick up points on the Grand Prix circuit to achieve these 50 points to get these $20,000 basically promised bonuses at the end of the year for the next season, they're now saying, oh, by the way, 3/4 of the way through the year, we're not going to pay you that anymore. Even if you've already achieved 50 points, we're not going to pay you for that next year like we promised. And that's the thing that's upsetting to a lot of people.
And understandably so, because that is, words I don't want to have to bleep out, terrible.
Yeah.
It's, I keep seeing unethical thrown around, and that makes sense. And I also keep seeing immoral thrown around. And yeah, that seems good too.
Now, the one thing I haven't seen thrown around, and Craig did touch on this, there's nothing really illegal about what they've done here. As I understand it, Platinum Pros were never guaranteed anything, and that the terms and conditions and benefits of Platinum Pro could change at any time or be removed. And so anybody who's screaming, oh, they should just totally sue WotC, look, we'll get to that later in the show. That's not it. It's not even that, you know, yes, immoral has been thrown around, unethical has been thrown around. Honestly, it feels like such a betrayal of trust, right? There were people who worked for this. There were people who went into this with a certain understanding and a certain expectation. And that has all just been completely tossed out the window. I've seen it described as rug pulled out from under them. And I think that's a pretty accurate description.
Well, it's kind of interesting because way back when they were going to swap over to the new format rotation, before anyone bought even their first pack of Khans of Tarkir, we were informed so that we would be able to make the right financial decisions if it affected us, or if we would be, you know, interested in knowing that now we're buying cards that are going to have a shorter standard lifespan. And they were very forward-thinking in that, and they knew that that was going to be something that would bother people. But for this, it feels almost short-sighted, like maybe someone was supposed to send out a memo a year ago and just didn't.
Well, a lot of their announcements, they kind of have a very progressive mentality when it comes to organized play. They want to implement new, great ideas that make the game bigger and better, and I like that that's the mentality. However, with some of the announcements over the past couple years, and this one certainly included, I feel like maybe it hadn't been thought all the way through, and maybe simply consulting a few more key people would maybe shed some light on the subject that they hadn't considered, and wouldn't. So some of the announcements have been kind of reneged in the past, and they've kind of amended them and revised them a little bit after some feedback or backlash, however you want to put it.
I think that's probably more accurate.
Yeah, I think backlash.
Yeah, and so with this one, the way I'm reading it, and knowing the head of organized play the way I do, Helene Bergeau, she's been fantastic. Most people that you'll speak to have nothing but good things to say about her. I feel like this announcement, they just kind of overlooked the fact that they can't really just start this with the 2016 season, because the players in, you know, this season, 2015-16, have already earned those benefits. So I think what they were intending to say was, if you earn platinum during the 2016-2017 year, then you will not get those same platinum benefits from before. See what I'm saying? I think that's what they should have done, certainly, and that was probably the thinking, and they just hadn't really considered the fact that people had already earned those benefits. So I suspect and hope that they will come back with an announcement and be like, okay, we thought about it, and we've decided we're going to honor the benefits already earned from this season throughout the next season. But then if you earn them the next season, they won't count anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think had they initially done that, I think that people would be upset, but they wouldn't be outraged.
Correct.
Because then at least, like Squee said, we have warning. Not we, us, but, you know, we, the general public, and you, the platinum players. You have warning, and you know what to expect, and you can plan for it. But this sudden, hey, no, not anymore, sorry, good day, sir, that's,
yeah.
It's not even just planning, it's just you know what you're in for. Like Craig was saying earlier, you at one point would go, okay, I'm going to devote this year to getting there. Like, they called it getting on the train. And if you got there, then you knew it would pay off. But when you got there and you're like, all right, I got there, and then they're like, okay, cool, here's some, like, Chex Mix. That would not at all have been – you wouldn't have pursued it in all likelihood. You wouldn't have sacrificed a year for that.
So I literally spent over $1,000 traveling to a Grand Prix in China for the purpose of picking up pro points so I could hit platinum. Now, if my entire – benefit now for hitting platinum is approximately $1,000, I probably would not have made that same decision.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And several other players, especially players from Asia, from Brazil, from certain parts of Europe that have to spend more money in travel than a lot of the United States players, I think it's going to affect them even more than it would affect someone like me, who has several Grand Prix that I could, you know, drive to or spend, you know, a couple hundred dollars to fly to. I don't have to spend thousands of dollars and spend a month away from home touring another country just to get enough, you know, pro points off the Grand Prix circuit like several European and Brazilian and Asian players have done this year.
So is it too late for them to backpedal? Have they done... I don't want to ask is it irreparable, but from all of you gentlemen, I'm just wondering, even if they come out tomorrow and go, oh no, we're sorry, we're gonna change it to something, we're actually gonna honor the folks who have already, you know, or are in the process of grinding their way to platinum, we'll do it for next year, but the year after we're gonna change. Have they already done so much damage to the trust that the community has in them, or is that really going to help? I just don't know.
I don't think
so. Yeah, no, there's definitely plenty of room. Like I said, when I read it, I assumed that this was just kind of an oversight. And if they came back and were like, okay, we've considered the matter more, we've considered feedback, or however they want to phrase it, and they said, we've decided to honor the benefits, but all these changes are still going to happen, I think that would be the ideal scenario, and it's certainly not too late for that. And I think that if that happens, that's kind of like, okay, well, you know, that's basically, now we're good. You know, it's like you say something hurtful to someone, and they're like, you know, why did you say that? I'm mad at you now. And then it's like, oh, I'm sorry, you're right, I shouldn't have said that. I wasn't thinking. It's like, okay, now we're good, you know? Like, you're not going to, like, hold some grudge, and some people might.
You've met Magic players, right?
Well, yeah, and also, you know, any community in general, especially internet-based communities, any decision is going to evoke backlash, no matter what it is, you know? So the fact that basically every announcement that's made is met with some not small amount of resistance by someone, or in some cases almost everyone, that's not something new for organized play to have to deal with, you know? So I have faith in Wizards. I have faith. I have not lost trust, although I believe that if this is something that is just implemented and everyone who earned their bonuses just doesn't get them, that would certainly affect behavior in a big way. I don't know. It's too soon for me to decide what I will do, but I certainly plan to continue to be a professional Magic player for the foreseeable future, and I'll find a way one way or another. I'm certainly more incentivized to qualify for Worlds now than I was before, given not
ain't
only
that the truth.
What's that?
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, given the fact that it's $100,000 for first and $12,000 for last place, and also just because that's kind of, they've made the decision, that's the new pro level. If you're not qualified for the World Championship, you're basically only a semi-pro. So the bar keeps getting higher and higher to be a pro Magic player, but that is still my goal, is to continue being a professional Magic player.
So there are lots of ways that have been bandied about already to overcome this if they don't backpedal, which, given the severity of the backlash, I honest, and their history of backpedaling when they have screwed up in the past, in some cases, I almost certainly see them going, okay, sorry, it's good for next year, and then it's over. I'm almost certain, just in my gut, that they're going to do that, unless somewhere up higher up in Hasbro they go, no, we're not. But I think if it was up to Wizards themselves, I think they'll do that, and I hope that they do that. But there are, as I said, there are lots of ways around this. So the big idea I've seen already is the formation of, like, third-party sponsorship teams, like esports teams. You know, get Monster to form a Magic Pro team and whatever, whatever.
I mean, Ultra Pro is already doing that. They're sponsoring my team.
True.
Now, granted, that's not like Coca-Cola level sponsorship, but it is moving in the direction that you're talking about.
Yeah, but at the moment, like, there's always been, you know, the Star City team and the Channel Fireball team, but I don't know how much of that, because I don't have any idea about the inner workings of how pro players do things. I don't know how much of that was just testing as a team or how much of it was actually sponsorship as a team, if that makes sense. And I don't want to go, so Craig, how much does Ultra Pro pay? No, I don't want to get into all that.
Yeah.
But I am curious about whether or not that's a way we could go to continue to have pro players that are more than just the 24 people who did well last year.
Yeah, so I've been in definitely the minority among pro players in holding this view. Whenever you see an announcement like this made, there's been several over the years where the pro player community as a whole, for the most part, would basically vent on social media saying they disapprove of whatever the policy change is. And I've been pretty staunch in my position of not doing that. Mostly because the type of person I am, I tend to see the good in things and assume well intention, even if sometimes it's not there, which I believe that Wizards is well intentioned, and they love the game. They want it to grow just like I do, just like most pro players do. I think with this particular announcement, I think that there was just this one kind of part that maybe wasn't thought through all the way. That's certainly rectifiable. Probably the most straightforward solution is, instead of increasing the world's payout this year, like they did from first place is 50,000 up to 70,000, I think they added like 100,000 to the prize pool, just change it back to what it was and honor platinum benefits for this year or for the following year that have already been earned. And then next year, start the whole world championship thing with the $500,000 payout. I think that would make the most sense. I don't know what that would do as far as budget, because that would probably increase the budget more than they wanted. But, you know, just doing something to show that, look, you know, we're trying to make Magic better, and we're not just going to, like, take money that's been promised. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that there's certainly room for amending the announcement. And even if they don't, if they just do this and go with it the way they decided to go with it. If that ends up causing some players to quit playing Magic or quit, you know, trying to pursue the professional career, I mean, that happens. That we saw a similar thing happen on the Star City circuit a few years ago when a similar decision was made when they restructured things. But as we saw, the Star City circuit is bigger than it's ever been, more successful, and basically very few people even remember that it ever happened. So I suspect that that will be what ends up happening even if they end up not changing the policy. And I don't know what my personal approach will be. Hopefully I'll just qualify for the World Championships and everything will figure itself out. But if it doesn't, I'll probably maybe produce more content. Maybe instead of just my weekly article every Friday, maybe I'll also start producing videos each week. Another idea that was given to me that I might do regardless is start giving personal Magic lessons. Some people have been interested in that, where I like, you send me a recording of you playing a Magic Online match, and I watch it very carefully and give you specific feedback, and then, you know, almost like a coach would to a tennis player, like a hitting coach for baseball, something like that, and, you know, charge some fee for, you know, this for my time. Just, you know, there's several different ways where I could kind of contribute more to the community, because if I don't feel like it's just Wizards' responsibility to just entirely pay for pro Magic players. I think giving them opportunities to make large amounts of money in tournaments is enough. And then we have, like, you know, independent retail websites like Star City and TCG Player and Channel Fireball that pay the players to produce content, and then maybe it's also up to the players to do other sort of activities to supplement their income. So I'm at least optimistic about there still being a way to play Magic professionally if, you know, for those who really love the game and want to continue with it, myself included.
And I was really happy when you responded on Twitter, because I know that you are very level-headed, more so than some others. And I wanted specifically you to give us this, let's call it the sunny side approach here, because it's all doom and gloom on social media.
Mm-hmm. It tends to be that way. You know, the first response is like backlash, and then, you know, then it's acceptance, and then it's like mourning, and then it's like, okay, now I can proceed and think rationally, but not until like 3 days after. You have to kind of go through the motions of withdrawal first.
So we kind of go through the stages of grief, but mostly we're just angry and retweeting.
Well, the internet makes that a little bit easier and more appealing, I guess, especially when it's about jumping on a bandwagon that everyone else is already doing. But like I said, I don't shy away from being in the minority when it comes to things like this. I tend to feel like I keep the big picture in mind. For instance, if they just said, we're discontinuing the Pro Tour, there's no more Pro Tours, then that means the Hall of Fame means nothing. That means all these benefits we've worked for mean nothing. That would be way worse news than cutting platinum benefits and increasing world's payouts. So comparatively, you know, this is like not the end of the world, as far as I'm concerned, even if this policy sticks. And, you know, it, even worse than discontinuing the Pro Tour, maybe they say we're discontinuing the printing of Magic cards. Like, Magic is no longer a game. Like, obviously they wouldn't do that because, it's doing so well. But I'm just saying, like, putting this kind of news in the context of the actual really bad news, I think that, you know, there's certainly a way to look at things that is not just this is the end of the world, you know?
Yeah, like, we're liquidating Magic Online and moving everyone over to Magic Duels, which is free to play. That would be bad news.
Really? That sounds like great news.
Well, okay, that would be bad news to all the people who have lots and lots of money tied up in Magic Online.
Okay, yeah, maybe. For yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would be great, like, great news to me, because I don't play Magic Online anyway, so hey, whatever. But that's one example of people who... So, The big problem that I have seen with this, that's sort of permeated social media, I've read responses, and listeners, there are links in the show notes to write-ups about this from Matt Sperling, who's a platinum-level pro, John Finkel, who's a Hall of Famer. You know,
that brand-new guy who made a splash at that.
Yeah, that no one's ever heard of, yeah.
Yeah.
And Brian Kibler, who is also a Hall of Famer, that this doesn't affect much. Because
he has his own Google.
Yeah, yeah, he has perfected the Kibler Google. So, and also just other people in the content producing community and whatnot, this seems to have shaken their trust in Wizards on a fundamental level. Craig, again, is part of the minority here, but we can't mention the minority without bringing up the majority.
Yeah, and I think I've been clear that I think it is the part of the announcement that should be amended is the part where they're not honoring the already earned platinum benefits for next year. That's the only part that I really feel like needs to be amended. But everything else, even though it probably affects me in a big way, in a negative way, I think it's a very reasonable decision from a business perspective. And it's very likely to have the best interest of Magic in mind. And so I'm not opposed to it.
And oddly enough, that is exactly the same point that the three aforementioned players' blog posts have been about, is that specifically, that pulling the rug out from under the people who have already earned it with this goal in mind, and, oh, I'm sorry, you don't get that anymore. That's the main problem that all three of them have with it. And everything else is just a thing that exists. You know, yeah, sure, they're going to do that in the future, but give us warning, blah, 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 blah. Because as Clues likes to say, whenever Wizards does something that some of us find distasteful, it's their game. They can pick up all their toys and go home and leave you with nothing if they so choose. And as I keep saying to Clues when he says that, it's just because they can do that doesn't mean they should.
Oh, and I'm not saying that they should.
No, not in this case, you aren't. But it's – and that's – that's been one of the responses. Well, they can do whatever they want. It's their game. Yeah, that's not the point. And that's a problem that I've had with lots of Wizards decisions over the last year. But I won't go into that until I get to the end of the show. But the backlash has already started in a very real way when the next week or the next season or whatever of the Vintage Super League, the next season, has been postponed. Randy Buehler tweeted, oh, just a few hours ago, that Season 5 is postponed 1 week, and our lineup may wind up changing. Because people are pissed.
And yeah, there are also several well-known streamers who, while we've been recording, have taken to Twitter and have said, look, you know what? I'm not going to stream this week. Just 'cause.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, there is now, as much as, look, I don't want to fuel the online angry echo chamber, but, we are a news show. This is news. We kind of have to mention it. Under the hashtag #PayThePros, there has just been a flood of, folks essentially saying, well, basically exactly, some of them are a little more extreme and are like, oh, restate everything right away, never make changes. Look, we're not saying that. We are certainly not saying that. But people are calling for WotC to essentially honor, you know, I hesitate to call it commitment because that is a loaded phrase, that they had to the players who've already worked towards platinum for the next year.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's actually trending right now, or at least it's trending for me. I don't know if trends is tailored to users, but there you go. First tweet using this that was related to Magic happened 18 hours ago, and there have been a whole slew of them since then.
Well, there you go, then. So, yeah. And of course, like any movement, this is going to go everywhere from, you know, let's burn Wizards down to all the way to, well, can we just, like, give them a sandwich? Like, it's going to be every extreme and every point in between on the entire spectrum. So, you know, just...
Was that this the spectrum of sandwiches to arson?
Yeah, yeah, that is pretty much. Isn't that the spectrum that applies here? Come on, man.
No, no, it's fair. I just wanted to make sure that we had that line for a potential show title later.
I don't know really what else there is to say. Wow, that's really funny.
Yeah, sorry, couldn't resist.
Yeah, the Twitter account, Magic is Ruined Forever, which has been around for a while, actually, tweeted, the award for the sickest burn of 2016 goes to, and it's another tweet from Ken Crocker that says, wonder how many pros would take that foil goif now. Oh, Pascal Maynard, you are my hero.
I hope they weren't wearing goggles when they did that.
Oh. All right, well, so I get the feeling Craig's going to need to go soon since we've had him for longer than we anticipated. So do we have any last-minute things about this or anything in general that we need to bother Craig about?
Well, I just want to say it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, and thank you so much for joining us to give us some insight from someone who this actually affects, because that's somewhat rare. You know, in these kinds of situations, there are a lot of people who will grab their pitchforks and immediately start yelling, but most of them with the pitchforks, it doesn't actually directly affect them, so it's nice to hear from someone who's on the other side of this.
Yeah, I tend to avoid picking up the pitchfork whenever possible. So, yeah, it's rare that you'll see me with a pitchfork. So, hopefully this resolves itself in some positive way. But, like I said, even though there's some big negatives with this announcement, let's be clear. There's a $100,000 first prize to a $500,000 24-person world championship in 2017. That is very big, very good news. So even though, yes, there are some not-so-good parts of this announcement that are kind of taking center stage, I'm pretty excited for 2017, and I would really like to be competing in that world championship in 2017.
Yeah, and actually one of the I'm trying to find it. I asked people about, here it is. So Brian Miller said to me, he's a judge actually, said to me on Twitter in response to this, he said, so some store pre-releases give out a pity pack to 2-2 records and some just give 5 boxes to first place. That's how I see it. And I was like, huh, that's a nice way to put it. In perspective that players can understand.
I'm kind of looking at it like this is Wizards pushing for an opportunity to treat Magic more like a sport. And that means that someone's got to walk away with a whole lot of money at the end for everyone to look up to and say, man, I want to be that. And this is a way to do it.
True. Of course, the problem is where they're getting that large pile of money and how they're getting it. Especially since, Finkel and Sperling pointed out that Magic has been growing and growing and growing and growing in sales and everything for the last decade, but tournament prizes haven't scaled up. So where's all that money been going? I'm just spitballing here. So
I got some really nice deck box at my pre-release.
Yeah, yeah, and that's nice and all, but I mentioned this to a friend of mine who was at that moment watching the Street Fighter V tournament at PAX. And he was like, good lord, if Capcom did this and killed all of their, like, name players disenfranchised all of their named players, the tournament scene would just evaporate. And I went, oh, God, let's hope that doesn't happen. Because what will we talk about on Monday Night Magic every week?
Yeah, like most announcements, though, I feel like this is not the end of Magic. This is not the end of the Pro Tour, and this is not the end of professional Magic players, regardless of what sort of amendments, if any, are made to this announcement. So, I mean, Magic is great. Magic cards being designed, they're being designed as well as they've ever been. Magic is growing as fast as it's ever been. The Pro Tour, you know, these are exciting big good announcements, the parts that are good, and I have every reason to believe Magic will continue to grow and be great. Probably not what you're hearing from most pros right now, but I suspect a couple years from now, or even a year from now, you'll see that is the case, one way or another.
Let's hope so. And real quick, before we lose you, you're the only one of the four of us who has seen Enter the Battlefield just yet. How much of that does this new announcement sort of, undermine?
Not undermine. So Enter the Battlefield showcases a handful of pro Magic players, and it kind of goes through what they experience from a personal standpoint. So it talks to some player like Owen Turtenwald's mom, his family, Shahar Shenhar. It interviews some of his family members, his friends. It focuses on the Peach Garden Oath and their incredible friendship and things like that, and the highs and lows of barely getting there in tournaments, barely not getting there, things like that. And it really kind of shows a lot of the personal side of top-level Magic that maybe a lot of players aren't familiar with, or a lot of people who don't even play Magic might not be familiar with. So it's kind of an interesting little snapshot into the personal lives of some of the top pros. So if you haven't checked it out, I would recommend it. And I fully expect that most of the players in that video will probably continue to be professional Magic players throughout the future, regardless of this announcement. Now, again, I could be wrong. I don't know. But all the players in that video really love Magic, and so do most Magic pros. And I feel like even if the money is restructured, there will find a way to continue being a pro Magic player.
Well, let's hope so. Or at the very least, hope that they, find something else that's worth their while, at the very least.
Yeah.
Well,
I was going to say, again, we thank you for your time. Is there anything you want to plug on the way out here?
Like I said, I write articles for TCGplayer.com every Friday. So check those out if you haven't. I talk about Magic strategy, how to get better at Magic, what deck you should play, whether it's a PTQ, an FNM, each weekend. And I also sometimes talk about finance. So whenever a new set comes out, I do a financial review and talk about which cards you should pick up, which cards you should let go of, whether it's for Commander, whether it's for Competitive Standard, whether it's for older formats like Modern, Legacy, things like that. So whatever your interests are in Magic, I tend to try to, write articles on various topics that are appealing to a lot of different audience. So check those out if you haven't already.
And as always, listeners, the link is to Craig's articles on TCG Player will be in the show notes under hosts this week, right next to his name.
Yep, and if you follow Magic coverage, I just did a deck tech of the Mono White Humans deck that I played at the Pro Tour. That's that I tweeted at Nicodles for Life. That's the if you want to follow me, I tweeted the deck tech that I did. You can follow me on Facebook. It's Craig Wesko. I'm probably the first one that comes up on your newsfeed, or if you look it up.
Sweet.
And thanks for having me.
And also, if you don't follow Craig on Twitter, you probably should.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that is good advice.
And his Twitter account's also in the... It'll be next to that. Trust me on this. It's there. Shut up.
All right, well, I'm gonna leave, so thanks again.
It has been a pleasure, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Craig.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks for giving us legitimacy once again.
All right. Have fun, guys.
Bye-bye.
I assume to save your software, we're going to terminate the call, and yeah.
No. When someone... As long as it stays recording, then we're good. So let's just...
Oh, okay.
Soldier on. Yeah. The problem is if we stop the call now and then I try to call you back without him, they'll be in here.
I see. Well, we don't want that.
Yeah. So let's just keep going.
All right. It was great having Craig on. That was awesome. Although I I try and be positive and usually end up snarky, and I feel like a jerk anytime I'm, you know, around Craig Wesko, because he's way too nice.
He really is, and that's why, like I said, I tagged a bunch of the Platinum Level Pros, all of them I could think of off the top of my head, which was actually more than I thought I could, believe it or not. I tagged a bunch of them on Twitter, and he responded, and I went, yes! Because I knew, one, I wouldn't have to do any editing, and two, he would not be sitting here with his pitchfork. Although, for God's sake, I hope if his spark ignites and he ends up on Innistrad, I hope he picks up a pitchfork.
Yes, for his sake.
Yeah, because that would be awful.
I have a feeling if his spark were to ignite and he went to Innistrad, he would be making a bunch of human tokens and they would have the pitchforks.
There'd be a good chance of that, yeah. So a couple of things that have come up in discussions of this on social media that I wanted to touch on. Okay, the only one that I really wanted to touch on, because I saw it in a comment thread, I think on Reddit, but I don't know. I was hitting a lot of different news sources today on this. Someone suggested that you know how WotC just got a new CEO? Like last week or something? It just recently happened.
Well,
there's been the suggestion that this is all totally 100% his fault.
Which is dumb.
It just got announced. I don't think he's actually taken over yet, has he?
Yeah, I was going to say, a couple of problems with that. First one is, I don't think he's actually working there yet. And the second one is, this change is not something that they came up with, like, last Thursday. they probably have been working on this for a little while now. It just got announced now.
The old CEO and the new CEO are sitting around, like, their ties are loosened, they're drinking Rolling Rock by the case. Like, you know what we should do?
Let's just change the entire appearance fee thing. Why not?
So they're going to be like, well, you're the boss, man. And then there they go. Yeah, that is not what happened.
Yeah.
So anyone who's like, no CEO, no, shut up. You're dumb. You're wrong. Stop it. Stop. Stop spreading your vile lies.
That's right. And we're all now responding to that in the chat. Okay.
Yeah.
all right. So do we have any other comments about this, or are we going to leave it there? I think maybe leaving it there.
That's enough, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I did. There was one more thing. Perlman actually brought it up to me in a conversation earlier today. He said, well, bigger prizes at the top end means that if a team gets together with the idea that we'll just split any of our winnings amongst each other. The problem with that is that then you run into collusion.
Yeah.
It's like, so hey, look, a bigger pool means there's more to go around, but then you have a lot more people that are, you know, conceding to each other, and it's just basically, I think it's your turn to win.
I am not a huge fan of really top-heavy prize payouts. At the same time, you gotta make it top-heavy enough to make it exciting, and I think that's their goal with what they're doing here, is to try and make a tournament, you know, with this huge prize pool for first place. I mean, $100,000 for first place, that is not... That's not exactly just walking around money. That's that's real...
That's like Segway money.
So... that could work on a couple of different levels. Are you sure you don't want that judge test?
I'm pretty sure I got my shots. I'm good.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Look, he can't make it to level 5 anymore. He doesn't want to play.
But, you know, the thing that I don't like about it is that it's such an exclusive tournament in the first place that this prize payout goes to, that it makes the dream, I mean, sure, on the one hand, it's like, oh, well, the dream is to make it to that, but you've just shoved that money so far out of reach that for not even just the average Magic player, the average good Magic player, it's still so far out of reach that I don't know that it's going to have the effect that they want.
I think the effect that they want is to be able to say, hey, look, here's the, you know, current Magic champion. He or she has pulled in over $100,000 in the last year alone. And that be the big defining, this is the league that we're in now kind of world. I don't think most people ever thought that that would actually be there or even really dreamed about it. It's kind of like how you watch pro basketball. You're not going to go out and be a pro basketball player, but when you hear that some guy makes, you know, $20 million a year, you pay attention. There's just an air of legitimacy to someone getting all that money. Whether or not that's good for everyone else, I don't know. But from a marketing standpoint, it's pretty clear.
It has also, however, taken the variance for pro players and just shot it way up. Because now you can have a year where you do really, really well and you make it to the World Championships. And even if you don't take the whole thing down, you've still made enough to justify all the work you put in. Or you fall just shy of qualifying for the World Championships and, wow, that kind of sucked.
I'm hesitant to have too much of an opinion on that part of it just because they've pretty much said they're going to be changing the requirements for World Championship.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, if it sticks to being things as it is right now where a bunch of the slots are already accounted for and the rest of it is everyone competing for a very small number of slots, then yeah, it's annoying. It's like hearing that the rich people are having fun playing $20 million tic-tac-toe. I mean, cool, you can do that. That does not apply to me. I would have actually been more entertained with this if they had decided that GPs carried more money or Pro Tours, things that the average person, if they work hard enough, can actually get into.
Sure.
But, I mean, I get it. Like I said, I think the reason why they're doing it is pretty clear. But, obviously, people are going to be upset. And
we said when we glanced at the earnings report thing, the managerial summary or whatever it was called, they specifically mentioned, you know, their esports side of things.
Yeah.
Which is odd. Now it's not odd anymore because they're trying to make it look like, look, Magic World Championships. It's like the Blizzard World Championships or the frickin' League of Legends World Championships. It's huge. Look at this. Never mind all the people they've stepped on along the way because the Magic community, as big as we are nothing compared to the general public. And I think they're trying to shift focus to the general public and trying to attract some of the third party stuff. And, you know, the headlines and look what we've done. And that all makes perfect sense, but you don't screw over the people who got you there.
Yeah.
But whatever.
And we did mention, while we were talking to Craig, we made mention of the Enter the Battlefield documentary. We should probably maybe flesh that out a little bit. So,
Did we mention that? We mentioned it last week, right?
Yeah, I think we mentioned it before.
Yeah, okay.
But the point is, it is premiering today. It's currently, while we're recording this, it's streaming on Magic's Twitch channel.
Yeah. I actually started watching it earlier before we started this.
It will be proper available to basically on-demand viewers on, I believe, YouTube.
It's going to be on YouTube and Netflix.
And Netflix,
according to the original announcement.
Netflix in certain places in the world. Depending on where you are, Netflix may not have it for you.
And there will be an added benefit if you watch it on YouTube or Netflix because you won't have the Twitch chat running on the side.
That is actually a benefit.
Mind you, you could also just full screen or something, but when I caught it earlier, I was actually going to rewatch some of the games from the Pro Tour by just pulling up the Magic Twitch channel and doing the rerun and just skipping to the games that I didn't pay as much attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did it, they were doing their countdown to when it started. I'm like, oh, I guess I could just watch this instead. And so I watched about 10 minutes of it, and then I jumped off of that because it's more fun to talk to Craig Wesco than it is to watch other people.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
But it is kind of sad that the timing, you know, I think we said it at the top of the show that the timing of these announcements from WotC was just lousy because it was such a great pro tour with interesting personalities and stories and decks. And then this
documentary
great,
coming out the next day.
Yeah. This great documentary that, from all reports I've heard is just great. Just amazing. And you should absolutely watch it. Comes out.
I saw it was really well done.
And then it's overshadowed by such a downer of an announcement. It's just
it is a bummer.
Yeah.
But speaking of bummers, let's get away from the big bummer.
Yeah.
And go to a more confusing bummer.
Yeah.
Clues, you were at PAX East, right?
Yeah. So
who was not at PAX East?
Let me just say that this stuff was a bummer that I came to on Sunday, but over the weekend I was at PAX East in Boston. I love going to PAX East. I have a great time every time I go to a PAX. And one of the highlights for me is of course always the Magic World Building panel and, checking out the WotC booth and, meeting some of the folks I know from WotC. And, none of that happened this year. And I do mean none of it. WotC was not at PAX East at all. Like zero. Like there was no WotC presence, period, full stop. No panel, no booth, no WotC reps on site. There were no, little, like, starter decks in the swag bags like there have been in the past. No learn to play. None of that stuff. All that stuff was gone.
And that's especially important to you specifically because that's what hooked you in the first place.
Yeah. So to put this into perspective about what Magic and PAX really mean to me, in 2010, there was the very first PAX East and I went to it. And in the little bag that they gave you with like the program and all that kind of jazz was a little 30 card monocolor starter deck full of terrible commons and like 2 uncommons. And it's an awful deck, let's be honest. But I didn't know how to play Magic. And, my wife used to play Magic. And so as we were sitting in line for a panel, I said, "Hey, you used to play this. Teach me how." And so she muddled through teaching me how to play Magic because she hadn't played in years herself. And I was hooked. I spent the rest of that con trying to play Magic when I should have been doing other stuff, like watching other panels or checking out other games. It's all I could think of. And I was hooked. I would not be involved in Magic at all, like at all, without that 30-card starter deck. Those 30 crappy Magic cards in that bag literally changed the past 6 years of my life.
Without those cards, Clues would not be so full of hate towards the top.
This is true. Hashtag stop the top. But I have so many friends in Magic. I have so many really good friends that I've met through this game.
And me.
And Chewy. I have
Chewy too.
I've become a very different person. Because of this game, through what I've been involved in the judge program and in, podcasting, it has completely altered my life. And all I could think of all weekend when I realized that WotC wasn't there and that, you know, there was none of this kind of experience that I had, it's all gone. There were literally tens of thousands of people who were missing out on that possible experience. Because WotC chose not to be there. Now, that doesn't mean there wasn't any Magic there, and I want to be clear about that. I want to send a really big shout-out to Tim Shields and the folks at Cascade Games, because they stepped into the vacuum, and they were running Magic events at the venue. So they had an area over in Tabletop where they were running drafts, and Sealed Box, they were running those events, which those are fun. So they were firing stuff all weekend, and there were plenty of people who were playing. I went and got in a game of Conspiracy, a 9-person Conspiracy draft, with Bruce Richard, and Adam Staborski was there, and is it the Manasaurus Wedge?
Yes,
I want to say his name is. Yeah, so, I mean, there were a bunch of people there. We had a great time. That was actually my first time ever playing Conspiracy, because I didn't get a chance to when it came out. And I had an absolute blast. I really enjoyed every moment of it and socializing with friends, but WotC was not there. And it really hurt. I felt like there was a big hole in what I was doing that weekend. I felt like something was missing the whole time. And it was the build up to the panel and it was going to the booth. They didn't even, you know how in the past Magic has had these, penny arcade pins, you know, the pins that they trade at PAX. Mm-hmm. There's always been one produced for PAX. They didn't even have those. They didn't send them. Like, I thought, oh, surely they've at least sent a box of pins that Cascade could put on their...
Like a Bloody Avison or something?
Could put on their prize wall. And no, there was nothing. And I was terribly disappointed.
Question clues.
Yeah.
Did you go to PAX East last year?
Yes.
So they had Magic stuff last year.
They did, yes.
Okay, because my original theory with this is that when they shifted the spring set from late April to early April / late March / whatever with the actual, you know, pre-releases and releases and all that, mm-hmm. that the hype system was shifted with it. because they'd used PAX as a place to, like, make announcements and hype up the new set and all that for so long. But with the set already out, and then on top of that, it being, you know, the Pro Tour weekend where they would get all of their audience for that, it wasn't really a marketing viable choice. But I didn't know if it was the same last year, because based on the internet, Dragons of Tarkir came out in late March. So you would have run into the same thing last year, but you said they were still there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were still there. I'm going to try and find that on the schedule from last year. So here's the problem. I think I've only missed one PAX at all, not including South and Australia. So PAX East and PAX Prime. I think I've only missed one since 2009. And this is the first time, because I didn't make PAX Prime, last year.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that the panel was on Sunday of last year, but if you give me a minute, I'm sure I can.
That's fine. It's just, I mean, the main thing to know about whenever, Wizards or really anyone else goes to an event like PAX, it's promotion.
Yeah. And you know, I'm completely certain that this was driven by where PAX East falls in, the schedule for, release of sets, right? I totally get that. But at the same time, you know, I could see having a scaled back presence, but they had none, like zero.
And well, I think the none is specifically because of the Pro Tour. Like if it had been a week earlier or a week later, you would have probably had stuff, but they put all their resources into the Pro Tour and didn't want to compete with themselves.
I don't know if those two things compete with each other.
Well, in terms of if they're using it as a like a PR launching board, they're going to do it at the Pro Tour, like anything.
That's a good point. But still, the purpose of something like PAX isn't just to show you, look at our shiny new toy that's coming out soon, you know, buy all our playsets and toys. It's also there to just connect with these horde of potential players. Like, if they look at it as each person that they hand one of these packs to could be a gold mine, why would you not hand out all of them?
Well, yeah. Look at all of the events that Wizards goes to that they don't host that don't turn into giant press conferences. Like, I've never seen them go to Dragon Con. I've not seen them go to other major industry things where they're not using it as a giant press release. I mean, that's marketing budget to go there.
Yeah, and I'm not asking them to go all out. I'm not asked. They don't even have to have a huge booth on the show floor. But, you know, to maybe support the TO who's going to run their events a little bit would have been awesome. I mean, even just having – they could have just picked one person from R&D and said, you know what? We're going to fly you out to PAX East, and you're going to spell sling. Just that, right? Okay, the cost of essentially a plane ticket for somebody who wanted to go anyway – they could have done that, but they didn't.
Where would you find this person at the event? Like, they have to rent space.
No. They just go to the TO who's running the Magic events and say, hey, make one of your tables for Gavin Verhey, because he's going to...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, space that's already handled by the TO. Not like WotC space. Okay.
Right. Yeah. I'm just saying that I was completely dumbfounded by zero involvement. Scaled back, I would have understood. It would have made sense. Yes, we just released a set, so there's not a lot to announce. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, their silence was deafening. That's how I'll describe it.
I mean, even Star City was there, but like, I saw tweets from like, Jeremy Noel, who is the, oh, crap. He's in charge of the media side of things.
Oh, yeah. I think he was in my conspiracy draft. He was just at the other end of the table.
Oh, well, there you go. I know that they were there in an official capacity, just wandering around handing stuff out. Because I saw a lot of tweets about him. Hey, we're here now. Who wants free stuff? And that was it. So I don't know, man. It seems like a missed opportunity. And I understand the marketing side of things. I just think it sucks.
That is perfectly fair.
Yeah, so that was, you know, I had that kind of downer feeling from the weekend, and then I hit the news from the Pro Tour, and it's like, oh, man, that's that too.
So you were already kind of nauseous, and then someone kicked you in the balls.
Yeah, pretty much. And then... And then, of course, hey, you know what? Why don't we just segue into the next piece?
Yeah. Now, given, I know people have been asking about this since it broke, and given how late it is, I think it's possible that we're going to talk about this now and then go deeper on it next week, because it's already a really long episode, a really good episode, but a really long episode. But we can't not mention it.
Yeah, let's at least touch on this. So, since we last recorded, it was announced that some judges have filed a lawsuit against WotC. Now, this is not necessarily news, I suppose. We know that there's been some tension between judges and WotC in the past. At least a couple of the folks in the lawsuit you might recognize as possibly being involved in the Southeast Judge incident, as I refer to it, where back around Christmas time, several judges in Florida were suspended by WotC, technically suspended by the DCI, let's be clear here, were suspended because of putting leaked information onto the internet, and there was a big brouhaha and all that stuff that we talked about back then. But this lawsuit was filed in California. It's essentially, if anyone has been following the news where there have been some lawsuits against Uber, where it's questioning whether Uber drivers are independent contractors or if they're employees, it's kind of like that. So the judges named in the suit have started, I believe it's a class action lawsuit technically. Oh, by the way, let me just start right here. I am not a lawyer. None of this is legal advice. Okay, with that out of the way, I believe this is a class action lawsuit, or at least they're trying to establish a class action lawsuit, essentially saying that judges are, and again, don't take what I'm saying as exact legalese, are essentially de facto employees of WotC. And I know that the suit is seeking certain things, at least, or at least is stating that it's seeking certain things. And I know a lot of people have suggested that if you bring this up to them, what they say is, oh, I think it's some judges trying to sue for back pay or benefits or something from WotC. I really don't think that that's the point of this lawsuit. And this is, again, me speaking here just based on what I know from talking to some judges and to some folks in the program. But again, I'm not speaking for anyone but myself, purely my opinion. I feel like the point of this lawsuit is to try and make the judge program and WotC two separate things, because right now they're weirdly intermingled. I mean, WotC has a say. Maybe not directly in who gets staffed for an event, but you can get suspended by WotC and suddenly you can't judge events anymore. And while this has never been the case for me, there are people who essentially make a living, and you can't really see the scare quotes around it, and make a living as judges. That they judge, they are a grinder, but on the other side, they grind judging events to make their living. And if WotC can suddenly essentially fire you because you did something they didn't like, that's kind of unacceptable to them. So there have been a bunch of threads about this, and there are a lot more complicated bits that we really need to tease apart here, but I really feel like the whole point of this lawsuit is to establish, are you employees that WotC has some say over, or are you not? Because right now they kind of have the best of both worlds. WotC does, not the judges.
Right.
So I think that's the point of this suit. I don't know. Again, I haven't talked to the folks who brought the lawsuit directly. I've only skimmed the lawsuit myself. But we do have a link to it. That this first link that Will has put in the show notes does go to the right place. My link here on this line that I'm just going to delete is currently busticated, so we'll just get
rid of it. Well, it was made private. Yeah. I don't know if it was supposed to be public.
Yeah, I don't know either, but like I said, the one that Will's got here, that one totally works.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take a look at it. But WotC has responded to the lawsuit essentially saying that it's baseless.
Which is standard operating procedure. They had to say that.
It is.
I don't read too much into that phrasing.
Like I said, I think I'd like to talk a lot more about this with these guys, but I think today that's pretty much all we need to say.
Yeah, and my co-host on The Manifold, Brian, is a defense lawyer. And while that doesn't, you know, one-to-one equal out, he is a lawyer, and he's been trained in ways that I have not. But because of various technical issues last week, we didn't actually get a chance to talk about it on the episode, so I don't have any more input either, or insight either.
I can tell you that it's telling that the lawsuit has been brought in California, because California has some very specific rules about what it means to be an employee. And so I think the choice of venue is was done specifically.
Yeah, when you look over the actual suit, a great number of California labor laws come up, like specifically California ones. And that's pretty reasonable from a strategic standpoint, as I understand it. So, like, I'm not saying that you should go read all of it, but if you'd like to get a sense for the kinds of cases being made, yeah, go look at it. It's interesting. You don't have to understand all of it to understand what's going on.
And I really hate, like, this was the bad news before Sunday.
Yeah, it was. This is the thing that we were going to be, well, this is the downer. And then the weekend happened.
Yeah. Lewis Black has a line about, never mind. I'll tell you guys later. It'll be.
I guess is there no swearing on Monday Night Magic?
Is exactly, and I'm not sure.
Lewis Black. I mean,
not sure if I can actually say that on this show without me having to edit it. So never mind.
Great. Check it out in the odds and ends.
Yay.
Of this episode.
But yeah. I get the feeling, like Clue said, that this isn't about, you know, get that money. It's about bring this case so that Wizards has to make things right. In some way or another. That's the feeling I got from it.
Yeah.
So, you know, cause a lawsuit isn't necessarily just about money, cause after the lawsuit, then things change because you don't want more lawsuits.
To relate back to the earlier, downer.
That's where I was going.
News, there's been this conspiracy theory put forth that, it's possible that the, let's call it downshifting in, appearance fees to pro players was done in order to further separate pro players from being considered employees of WotC in light of this lawsuit. Now, that's some pretty deep conspiracy theory, but I don't know. There's just enough kernel of truth there that I could believe that a lawyer somewhere said, do this now.
Hmm.
Which might be why it feels...
I'm a little skeptical of it, but again, we're never going to know.
No, God
no. This is not something that's ever going to be stated in public or on any record.
No, I fully expect that if this thing manages to go to trial, that there will be some settlement and everyone involved will never say anything ever again.
Yeah, and then there will be announced changes to something or other regarding judging and whatever in the future. But again, this was going to be where we spent the majority of our time this week until Sunday when the world exploded.
That was what the show notes were filled with on Saturday.
Yeah. Yep. So it, don't worry, we'll come back to this, hopefully next week when we can actually discuss some of the implications and things like that. But for now, that would actually just be us. What's the word I'm trying to look for here? Thinking out loud or,
Nougat?
Nougat?
Yeah, you just wanted a word. I thought I would.
Caramel.
Caramel, yes.
Clues, I hate you.
This is us doing something so that we're not going to get a delay of game penalty.
Ah, yeah, we're acknowledging
that something
that
is
this
happening.
This is totally a story, and we are going to talk about it, just not now.
Yeah, yeah. And if we were to spend more time on it, it would be, crap, we're thinking of things that aren't actually true, but...
Speculating?
Speculating, thank you, jeez!
Would we be... speculating quietly about it?
We don't do anything quietly.
But that is also true, yeah.
Okay,
now that Craig is gone, we can be loud again, see? He really is a nice guy.
He really is, man.
Yeah.
That's...
So, there's another thing here, but I don't actually know anything about it, because I watched the video and then I said, oh. So,
the Community Super League?
Yeah, there's a thing called the Community Super League, where...
I can talk about that.
Okay, go right ahead then.
It's in the world of Magic Digital. And so the thing with it is they've done Super League type things in the past where you tune in and you watch people play and you also get commentary as they play. And it's sort of like a fun, passive way to do Magic. In the past, they've done the Vintage Super League, which, as of the article linked here, will be starting its next season this week. That's embarrassing. But more importantly, so what you get out of this one, the Community Super League, is rather than going with Standard or Modern or Vintage or any of that stuff.
Extended!
Quiet, you.
Prismatic Stairwell is more likely to see play than Extended.
Wait, you weren't even playing when Extended existed. Be quiet.
No. It still existed on the books when I started. It's just no one ran it.
Oh, okay.
That's understandable. Valid FNM format. But, yeah, so essentially what they're going to be doing here is they're going to be jumping around through essentially the more fun, more casual formats instead. And they're going to pull together a bunch of people who are known for streaming and known for being, you know, entertaining personalities. And just sort of like, here you go. You're going to power through all these different formats. And like, for example, some of the ones they're going to be doing are, like some of the examples given are no band list modern, which is one extreme. And then
so
they're
twin.
Like budget legacy. I don't know what no band list modern looks like. It's probably Merit Lage all over the place.
Sorry.
Yeah. Ranging from that to, Momer Basic, which is one of those wonderful online-only formats for practical reasons.
That's going to come. How are they going to figure out who has the sweetest deck for that? That's what I want
to know. That's
going
to be the reason to tune in.
I guess.
To Tribal Wars, not the game, to Iron Root Chef. And essentially, yeah, they're just going to be doing a bunch of for fun formats with a bunch of fun personalities, and it's something you can tune in and watch. There's a list of all the people involved.
I wonder if this is going to replace the Community Cup.
It kind of feels like the Community Cup being stretched out into a league, yeah.
Yeah, instead of just one weekend with different people every year, it's now a long-running thing with these people.
Well, realistically, looking over this list, I think most of these people have been in the Community Cup, and because most of the people in the Community Cup don't do it twice, they might have actually just started wanting to use these people more.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it looks fun. Could be interesting. They're also going to have guest flavor judges for things like Iron Root Chef, so it should be interesting. This is all beginning on April 28th, so this coming up week, it's going to be on Twitch.tv/Magic, and we'll see where it goes.
So there you go. There's also a really cheesy trailer that goes with it, so feel free to watch that and roll your eyes in good-natured fun. Or
as
just
the way.
Or just roll your eyes, you know, whichever.
Yeah.
So, that's everything until Magic Online, so let's just turn it over to our goblin in-house and let him ramble for a while.
Yeah, on the plus side for us, there's not a whole lot going on in Magic Online this week since the set just came out a week ago and they didn't do downtime on the 20th. So, really and truly, if you want to just think back to all the things that I said last week, those are still pretty accurate. Moving forward to the few new things that we do have, coming up this Wednesday on the 27th, they're going to be doing more of the Pro Tour Gauntlet. So, you know, coming back on the 27th, they're going to be using standard decks from Pro Tour, Shadows Over Innistrad, so you'll get to watch some people play through using those. Could be entertaining. They're showing off the May Organized Play, Magic Online, whatever, play promo cards. Hey, look, it's Gaia's Cradle. I hear those are good.
I like that card.
Hey, Clues, it's Goblin Warchief still.
I like that card, too.
Good times. Yeah, most of the stuff is really just reruns of previous news. Like, this is pretty common in the Magic Online news cycle. Like, new set comes out, yay, cool, and now they just want you to go play it. They're not going to be doing another bit of Year of Modern until the 4th of May, so we're off on that. And beyond that, I just have another bug blog update from last week. I've hit most of these before, so I'm just going to briefly go over the four new ones. So some cards with the Madness ability do not display the correct reminder text. The most noteworthy example is Fiery Temper. So no reminder text in case you forget what Madness does. You'll feel bad about it, I guess. Whatever. If a player controls both Skin Invasion and Cult of the Waxing Moon, so I'm going to have to read those probably. So Skin Invasion is the aura, the red aura that makes creature attack each turn available. And when the creature dies, creepy things happen because the enchantment comes back transformed into an icky monster thing. But Cult of the Waxing Moon says that if a permanent you control transforms into a non-human creature, put a 2/2 green wolf creature on the battlefield. Well, Skin Invasion sure is a non-human creature, right? I mean, it's an aura, so no. But you know what? Have a wolf anyway. You earned it. So that's kind of neat.
Oh, I almost made it terrible. No, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So yeah, the cult will incorrectly create a token when Skin Invasion returns to the battlefield as Skin Shredder. So good job. Don't rely on that. This is a bug and it will be fixed if you're found exploiting this in that incredibly niche circumstance. You could be in trouble. All right. Third of the four things for this week. If an opponent removes an equipment from the battlefield with its equipped ability on the stack, targeting Avicennian missionaries, breathe, the missionaries will incorrectly transform at the end of the turn. For reference,
wait, what?
Avicennian missionaries text is, at the beginning of your end step, if it is equipped, transform it. So if you would be equipping it and your opponent kills the equipment, the missionaries still transform. Because I guess it just is triggering on it being targeted with an equip ability instead of actually being equipped. So that's weird. Yay, bugs. And finally, if a player controls a Tireless Tracker, who, you know, is pretty popular right now, and plays the last card in their hand, if that card is a land with a replacement ability that allows that player to reveal a card, such as the Port Town Duel from the current set, or like Secluded Glen if you go back to the lore one, then the tracker's ability will put the clue on the battlefield only after the controller passes priority. So, weird, but just weird. And the rest of it's just some of the stuff I hit on last week. If you play enough Magic Online, you should keep an eye out on the bug blog to know what's going on, what's fixed, what you can request reimbursement for when you find out why something weird just happened, and also things to avoid so that you don't have to. So, that's the bug log. That's Magic Online. We'll see if there's more news next week once things have settled in a bit.
Nice.
Hoorah.
Hey, look, I remember to unmute.
Ooh.
Yay.
Improvement.
I should get points for that.
Yeah, so, we'll only give you an eighth the number of points you had before, though.
Oh. Now I'm sad again.
And that goes to somebody.
Can you guys hear that?
Yeah.
Hear what?
Okay. That would be the Skin Invader slowly creeping into Clues' head.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine then. Just wondering if the mic was picking up whatever they're doing up there. So, I guess we should wrap it up. Yeah. This has been kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
On the plus side, we did get to talk to Craig Wesko.
That was pretty cool.
This would have been an absolutely bleak episode without him.
Yes. He was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. But, his relentless positivity is good. I don't know if it's entirely called for, but it's good. But there are a few things we need to point out. There are probably still people going, well, this only affects 30-some people. It really doesn't. Clues, you had a thing about this.
Yeah, so there was a tweet that was done by Saffron Olive, who had some very important points about this. You know, a lot of people are like, "Oh, this is just for Platinum Pros. What do I care?" Look, there's a lot that goes on. Take that deck that Finkel was playing at the Pro Tour.
Mm-hmm.
That deck came together, as Craig was saying, because of a team of professional players who got together in their time and innovated that deck, put it together. It was brand new for this Pro Tour. It's not something that we saw evolve in one of the previous tournaments and just made some refinements and brought it here. This was new. I thought it was interesting. I wouldn't play it myself, but there it is. If you eliminate the incentive for Platinum Pros to exist, if you eliminate professional Magic player as a profession, whether you think that anybody deserves to have that as their profession or not, which, by the way, it's kind of spiteful. I think it's great that some people can earn a living doing the things that they love. That kind of innovation only happens because this sort of an environment exists. And any time changes are made to it, and I'm not even going to say that the changes that they've made are bad, but they may be. They're disrupting an entire ecosystem rather suddenly and without warning. And even if these changes stick around, even if these changes get rolled back, who knows? It's going to have an impact on people's ability to do this. It's also going to have an impact on people's desire to play. You know, if these pros, you know, some of them, they hold down real jobs, right? And they do this stuff in their quote-unquote spare time because they think it's worth it, because they enjoy the game and whatever financial rewards they get offset whatever else they're not going to do. There's a calculus that goes into that, right? Is it going to be worth their time anymore? For some of them, the answer is going to be no. And there are going to be people, well-known people, who are going to bow out of this game that we just won't hear from again. And I think that our experience is lessened by that. The personalities on the Pro Tour are why we look for the Pro Tour. It's why we look to see what big names are doing. I joke occasionally that LSV is my favorite pro player. He is. But if LSV decided that it's not worth his time to do this anymore, I would lose that appeal. I wouldn't look for his name. I wouldn't look for his decks. I wouldn't look for coverage featuring him anymore because he'd be gone from that. It would be another voice that was silenced. And so, yes, this only directly affects like 30 people. But the indirect effects could be huge. So I see why people are outraged. I see why people think that this is a big deal. So that's what I wanted to say about that. The other thing that I want to say before we wrap this up here is the most disturbing tweet I've seen about this so far is someone suggested that we all band together and boycott game day. Now, first of all, I think that's misguided for two reasons. Reason number one, almost no one goes to game day anyway. Reason number two, don't boycott events at your local store because of this. Okay? Yes, that sends a very clear message to your local store to stop holding Magic events. That's the message that it sends. And that is not really what you want to do. Yes, you may feel very strongly about this and you want to send a message to WotC. Do that. There are avenues for feedback, but please, please, I'm begging you, do it constructively. You can express your displeasure respectfully and in a mature way that still gets your message across. You don't have to spit nothing but anger and bile and hatred. But whatever you're going to do, if you're going to complain, at least aim it at the right target. Don't make your local game store suffer over this. Your local game store is probably barely holding it together as is. They don't need extra added stress because of this. So support your local game store, whatever it is. They are a treasure, and if you've got a good one, hang on to it for all it's worth. Okay.
This is coming from a man who doesn't have one anymore and really feels it.
I really, really do. Absolutely.
So he's talking from the bottom of his heart here. He means it.
Yeah, I really do. You may not recognize how great it is until you don't have it anymore. And so, you know, sure, you can buy a deck box for, you know, 20 cents cheaper from some online retailer. But you know what? If you need a deck box, just buy it from your local store. They could use the money. Buy a snack while you're there. That's fine, too. And just tell them how important they are to you and let them know that running events is important to you. Don't boycott them over this. That's counterproductive to everything.
Yeah, that is shooting yourself in the foot because, like, you might be thinking, well, if we put pressure on our store, then they'll put pressure on Wizards and not a. It's not how it works. If they put pressure on your store, and your store folds, Wizard goes, well, damn. And that's all. They might not even go, well, damn. They'd be like, oh, we'll just cross them off the list. It doesn't matter to Wizards. It matters immensely to the store itself. So, don't do that. As I say periodically, no, shut up, you're dumb, stop.
Like a mantra with you.
Well, I have to say it a lot lately.
Flavor text.
Have you considered business cards that just say that? You can just hand them out. Hi, I'm Chewy. No, you're dumb, stop.
I'll get those on the next round of Chewy tokens.
There you go.
So, yeah, this... It's just a big feels bad, but I agree with Craig. I don't think Magic is dead.
We've tried everything else to kill it. It'll survive this, too.
Yeah, ain't that the damn truth. If it could survive the last Magic Online client lasting for as long as it did, I think we're good. And this is coming from me, and listeners of the show have been listening for a long time know that WotC has been undermining my trust in them a lot lately over the last year. The long rant about Zach Jesse's banning that I cut out of Monday Night Magic. The Southeastern Judge incident, we ranted and raved about how stupid that was. The proxy thing, remember that? Oh my god.
The playtest card thing.
See? And now this platinum pay cut. And what bothers me about this is that I'm sure I'm forgetting other things that WotC has done to cause, like, moral outrage in me.
Didn't somebody used to have a counter of the number of days since WotC did something stupid? Or is that just something that I imagined in a fever dream?
Let's hope so.
I think that's actually just one of those upkeep triggers that we keep forgetting sometimes.
Yeah. Let's all try to come away from this as better people. Not to, you know. That's actually
werewolves it is.
Yep. So how about we finally put this one to bed, you know, 3 hours later and say goodnight, everybody. So take us away. Who goes first? One of you. I don't even care.
Usually Squee. Squee.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinAbob. There's no I in Goblin because they couldn't afford to make it to this event. So it's just going to stay home and hope Magic Online pays off. Beyond that, you can follow my adventures over at enchantworld.com, and I've actually set up a few interviews over the next few weeks to just try the other format of me just doing interviews and posting those. So that'll actually be pretty neat because it's guaranteed content since I can actually control this. And hopefully after I get a little more attention, we can find a hybrid format that works for everything. But nice. It is not dead. It is just waiting for the upkeep. So
he's resting.
It is asleep. Possibly tapped and not untapping next turn. We'll see what I can do.
It doesn't want to go in the cart.
Does it feel happy?
It does.
Good. And likewise, if you need to catch me through email, you can send an email to planeswalker.squee@gmail.com, and those will go to me, and I will see those. If you've got something that takes more than 140 characters to say, if you're going to Grand Prix Charlotte, I will be there. I will be the one not playing Magic next to Chewy.
I'll be the one walking around bothering people.
Yeah, that's pretty much
and not playing Magic. Yeah.
Oh, and one other minor thing. So last Friday, I took to my closet, which has like a bajillion lands and other useless old Magic cards, and I got all the land and all the unused fat pack boxes, and I just loaded up the fat pack boxes with sorted lands. Then I took them to my game store, and I just handed them to them. And they're going to be using the land to make limited continue to work forever. And they're going to be using the fat pack boxes with their junior league so that the younger players who don't really have a budget have things to keep their cards in now. And this took me very little time because otherwise I would have just probably thrown or recycled all this stuff. So do that if you have a local game store that you want to support. I'm pretty sure they always want lands if they run draft. And if you have fat pack boxes that you're never going to use, someone will probably get more value out of it than the space it's taking up in your closet. So.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there is a neat thing to do. And that's all I got for this week, so go get them, Clues.
Look at Bill being a productive member of society.
Where'd it go, Squee?
Wasn't even court ordered this time.
You can find me on the Twitters. I am at LockLuzet, spelled just like it is in ye olde show notes. You can also find me on the Random Discard podcast. We didn't record last week because I had to fly to Boston to be sad and happy, and then sad again and happy, and then fly back. And
then who's had to or got to?
I got to be sad. So sad. But we'll be recording again this week, so look for a new show. And that's all I've got.
Yeah. And so that leaves me, where I have been playing a fair amount of Rocket League still. It was on sale this week. I'm bummed that it wasn't on sale for very long, but it was on sale for only $12. And I made sure to tell people, and I had a few people say, oh my god, I played that. So now I have more friends that play Rocket League, and it's nice. I had the sublime pleasure a few nights ago of actually having a three-man team that knew what they were doing in the non-competitive server. And it was awesome. It was a thing of beauty to have two other teammates that know what they're doing, and you can trust them to not screw it up. Oh, we actually beat another team of three so bad, I think three games in a row, that they all left. And it made us happy.
Oh, you got the Rage Quit achievement. Nice.
Yeah. But, on the content production side of things, I started Heroic Blackrock Mountain on Hearthstone, which is totally not a competitor to Magic, by the way, according to Wizards. Not at all. Not even a little bit. But,
takes two to compete.
Yeah, we'll go with that. So, I started that, and I'm currently working on the second video for Heroic Blackrock Mountain, where I had 85 minutes of footage to try to compress into a watchable video, and there's lots of rage and screaming and almost crying, like it's bad, but hopefully you guys will enjoy my pain. I had another thing that I was about to talk about, and then it completely fell off. Oh no. What was I gonna talk about? Like, it's gone. It was in my head, and now it's not.
Was it nougat?
It was caramel. Also, I would like to say right now that I think that calling creatures with no abilities vanilla is offensive to vanilla enthusiasts, and that we should stop that.
Well, they should get some keywords.
Because vanilla is not plain. Vanilla is vanilla flavored. And vanilla is delicious. This occurred to me when I went to lunch with a friend of mine, and I had to get just vanilla ice cream. And I'm sitting here eating this plain vanilla ice cream going, my god, this is good. This isn't plain at all. This is vanilla flavored. And it occurred to me that this is...
Chewy?
Yeah.
You know what else is good?
What's that?
Nougat.
You know that vanilla doesn't mean bad, right?
No, but it means plain and boring. And vanilla is not boring. Vanilla is delicious.
I mean, an 8-8 for 5 is pretty nice, right?
Yeah, well, so is a 2-2 for 3.
That's nowhere near as nice.
Oh, it's not as nice, no. But it shouldn't be called vanilla. So I while Clues has stopped the top, and the greater community has paid the pros. I don't have a fancy hashtag yet, but I think we need to stop denigrating the glory that is vanilla by assuming it means boring and plain and basic. Mm-hmm. So there you go. That's my soapbox from now on.
All right.
That vanilla ice cream is good as hell, man. I'm just saying.
Delicious.
I got nothing. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at the Manipool. If you would like to send me an email, that's Chewy, Chewie, at mtgcast.com. And if you want to check out the YouTube channel, then it's youtube.com/c/the Manipool. And of course, if you want to help support what I do with all of these podcasts and videos and things like that, then check out the Patreon, where every little bit helps, and I really do appreciate it. It's patreon.com/, you guessed it, The Manipool. You can get behind-the-scenes stuff. You can get stuff that's not Monday Night Magic early, and it's nice. Oh, the Hearthstone nerfs! That's the other thing! Mike and I did a video. My Manapool co-host Mike with the beard, you know, the sexy one, did a video explaining the Hearthstone nerfs that happened. So they've created, like, basically a non-rotating core set that will stay in Hearthstone. I'm putting this in magic terms for you two. They've created this, well, it's already there, but they've altered this non-rotating core set to make some of the cards less auto-includes in certain decks.
Did they stop the top?
There is no top, so yeah. Yeah, they did, see? I think we just got a new Hearthstone player. Ding. But they had to nerf a few cards, 12, in fact, from the basic and classic sets, which are the non-rotating part, so that future sets, to free up design space, so the future sets cards will make a bigger impact, because why would you ever play this new thing when this thing over here that's amazing for its mana cost is still there? And Mike and I explained each of the nerfs and why they are actually a good call and how it opens up design space and this and that and the other. So if you're a Hearthstone player and you opened up and you saw the following cards have changed and you went, what? Well, we explained it. Go check it out. That's on the YouTube channel. And also there's a new set coming out in Hearthstone tomorrow. So today, for those of you that are listening to this, the instituted format. So now there is a rotating standard format and a non-rotating format called Wild, you know, which is going to be like Legacy, but...
Is it going to be Wild?
Hopefully, yeah. So I'm very excited. Plus we've got these 12 old cards that we've been playing with for a very long time that are now completely different in some cases. It's a very exciting time to be a Hearthstone player, much like it's a very depressing time to be a pro Magic player. So, yeah, that sucks. So, yeah, with that, if you want to, by the way, if you want to help support Magic podcasting in general, but not me specifically, that's understandable. I'm kind of a jerk. So you can go to mtgcast.com and click on the Support MTGcast button and sign up for a small monthly donation there, because while it's completely free to all of our podcasters and completely free to all of you listeners, it is not actually completely free and is actually quite expensive. So every little bit there helps. And eventually the plan is to build up MTGcast into something that is not just free hosting, but is a way to help podcasters actually do something with their show and turn it from just a hobby into a hobby that might make them a few bucks in the far future. That's the plan. But in the moment, it's still in the red, so we need your help. Or they need your help. I keep saying we, like I have any part of that. I don't. So now I'll be done. So, a big thanks again to Craig Wesko for joining us. Be sure you guys go check out his articles on TCG Player. He is an extremely nice guy, and I'm so glad that he brought a well-thought-out and level-headed perspective to this whole big mess, because that's what it is. It's a mess. And now we're done. So, this has been episode 510, wow, of Monday Night Magic. Thank you all so very much for listening, and please, go play some Magic.